Joe Biden's pardon of Hunter can only result in the conclusion by the American people that a criminal operation has occupied the highest office in the land for nearly 4 years.
Hunter Biden, your son, was getting paid a lot of money to serve on the board of a Ukrainian energy company facing serious corruption charges.
I don't know what he was doing. I know he was on the board. I found out he was on the board after he was on the board, and that was it.
Joe Biden met with Ukrainian, Russian, and Kazakhstani business associates of his son's at a dinner in Washington, D.C. while he was vice president, according to records on Hunter Biden's abandoned laptop. According to NBC News, Joe Biden discussed pardoning Hunter back in June when Hunter was convicted. However, he told his aides he would lie to the public about his pardon plans. The pardon covers the time period from when the CIA and the U.S. State Department began their 2014 coup in Ukraine. And simultaneously, 2014 was the year that the Hunter Biden-funded biolab company Metabiota began coronavirus research with the Department of Defense in Ukraine. In June, a spokesman for the Russian military said the U.S. had relocated Ukrainian biolabs to Africa in an attempt to release an avian flu pandemic and blame it on Putin. Of course, this is where Joe Biden stumbled around and fell asleep at the beginning of the week after pledging $1 billion to struggling Africans while ignoring the full-blown calamity in North Carolina.
And today, I'm announcing over $1 billion in new humanitarian support for Africans displaced from homes by historic droughts and food insecurity.
But after the Hunter pardon, it appears that Joe is traveling to pay off his partners in crime and cleaning up his mess. Of course, the legacy media blew its top over the pardon. Even CNN is calling it out.
The Biden Justice Department has been politicized. That's this message, the message this morning from, no, not just Donald Trump, but from President Joe Biden himself.
Is there any possibility that the president would end up pardoning his son?
No.
Have you ruled out a pardon for your son?
Yes. I said I'd abide by the jury decision. I will do that, and I will not pardon him.
Well, it stood until last night.
While Special Counsel David Weiss's office opposed Hunter Biden's motion to dismiss his indictment, on top of that, there's the question of Hunter's ability to utilize the Fifth Amendment now that he has had a blanket pardon.
Did you funnel money to your father from Burisma while he was vice president of the United States? His answer? I declined to answer under the rights accorded to me by the Fifth Amendment. He has no Fifth Amendment rights. By accepting the pardon, he gave up his Fifth Amendment rights, and he would be forced to answer that question no matter who is inculpated. If he still persists in not answering, he'll be incarcerated for up to 2 years, an incarceration that is not pardonable.
Hunter may be pardoned, but now the backs of the big guy and his brother James are up against the wall. They will need pardons as well. And Biden's aides, a.k.a. handlers, are mulling preemptive pardons for Dr. Fauci, Liz Cheney, and a host of Trump critics in his line of fire.
Of course, it's come out, and Trump's announced, and so has Tom Homan and others, the new borders are, that they are going to criminally go after the human traffickers and smugglers, including the NGOs, the UN, the government officials like Mayorkas and others. And I've been expecting Biden to try to give them pardons, and my sources have told me exclusively that they are looking for pardons. Well, now Politico is reporting that Biden is looking at a whole range of pardons for people across federal agencies, but namely Fauci.
There is no question that there will be a challenge the coming administration in the arena.
There will be a surprise outbreak.
And I will put the lie to the individuals of the NIH, particularly Gallo and Fauci and Hazeltine and Essex, and the rest of these scoundrels of the worst order. Criminals guilty of genocide. Without a doubt.
We have a fivefold rise in pertussis cases, whooping cough over the last year, 15 measles outbreaks this year. We've got polio that's been in the wastewater in New York State. All that's going to come crashing down on January 21st on the Trump administration.
Biden's final desperate, sweaty act on the grip of the levels of power can end up being the largest.
Most people that research supplements and that are into health know that Irish sea moss and its benefits are documented and incredible. Well, our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com, happened to be able to get one of the top suppliers with the highest rated Irish sea moss to give them the authorization to private label it. So now it's Alex Jones Ultimate Sea Moss, exclusively available at thealexjonesstore.com. It is the ultimate superfood. The iodine, the trace minerals, the elements, the vitamins that are in this are incredible. They give you instant energy, instant focus. But as you take it for a few weeks, you feel the stamina, the libido, the mental clarity. It is a superfood. It is concentrated. So get Alex Jones Ultimate Sea Moss exclusively discounted at thealexjonesstore.com. And listen to this. One bottle is 40% off. Three bottles is 55% off. And again, one bottle is 40%. Get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you for keeping us on the air.
It's Monday, December 9th in the year of our Lord, 2024. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this thing, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, band.video. Today is the day, December 9th, in a courtroom in Houston. The fate of Infowars will be decided one way or another. And just like with everything in politics, everything with Infowars sort of depends on your perspective. We talked about it a little bit last week when Chase Geiser joined me in studio, and he was saying, you know, it seems like if the judge was just going to let the auction go through and let the onion buy Infowars, he would have just done it already. So the fact that we're having this hearing sort of evidence that the sale's probably not going to go through, nor should it from everything we know about how the whole auction so-called went down. But of course, I point out that it could be the exact opposite. It could be that he wants the sale to go through and he doesn't want there to be any opportunity for us or friendly buyers to complain or object about how it went down. So he wants to just lay out the evidence and say, look, I listened to all the evidence. I heard all the complaints and the sale goes through just in order to, forestall any objections later on. So I don't know. I don't know which way it's going to go. We'll find out a little bit later today. I'm not sure the crew knows what time the proceedings will start. 1 p.m. Okay, so proceedings begin at 1 p.m. So we'll probably know around the time the war room starts a little bit more, at least have an idea of which direction the whole thing is going. No matter what, I hope you support us at thealexjonesstore.com, and whether that's to continue Infowars operation, carrying on into the future, or starting something new, thealexjonesstore.com is where you go to support us. We, of course, have just so much news to talk about over the weekend. It's really a doozy. We're, of course, going to spend a lot of time on Syria, trying to figure out what happened, what happens now, how this plays in to the wider conflict of World War III. We'll be giving you a very thorough breakdown there and probably spending most of our time there. But that's not all. Trump gave a really powerful interview over the weekend as well, and we'll talk about what he said, because it seems like he is doubling and even tripling down on his campaign promises when it comes to pardoning the January Sixers or deportations, ending birthright citizenship. A lot of really good stuff from the interview with Trump this weekend. We'll talk about that as well. We'll try to tie it all in together. We'll also talk a little bit about our good friend of the show, by which I mean we show his clip all the time and talk about it constantly. Alex Karp, CEO of Palantir, went viral over the weekend with Elon Musk retweeting one of his, I guess Alex Karp went on a rant, and it's Elon Musk being like, this is the most important, the most powerful 2 minutes you'll ever see. Well, we'll look into exactly what motivates Alex Karp and what is Palantir and the Gotham program and the AI system that is quietly but assertively taking over the world. We'll get all into all of that and more. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Monday, the 9th of December, 2024. The headline from Information Liberation: Syrian government falls to ISIS and Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists. A really stunning and monumental development. The Syrian government fell on Sunday to a lightning offensive from Turkey-backed rebel terrorists with links to ISIS and Al-Qaeda. The Syrian government appears to have fallen after this lightning offensive. It began about 8 days ago, after 4 years of the so-called Syrian civil war falling into a lull. Basically, no major advances, no major disruption had occurred since about 2020, but following the Gaza offensive and the attacks on Hezbollah in Lebanon, which did a lot of the heavy lifting originally in protecting the Syrian government from the ISIS so-called moderate rebels backed and trained by America, NATO, and our allies. Well, the devastation wrought on them meant that they weren't there to lend a hand to Assad. Assad has fled Syria. He now apparently has claimed asylum in Russia. And basically the entire Middle East has been overturned. And this is a just absolutely, like I said, monumental and major development. And it is a new age in the Middle East. And we'll talk about all that entails in just a minute. Meanwhile, from Al Jazeera, Russia gave asylum to deposed Syrian President al-Assad, Kremlin confirms. Kremlin spokesman Peskov has confirmed that removed Syrian President Bashar al-Assad was given asylum in Russia as he fled a lightning advance by opposition forces, saying the decision was made personally by President Vladimir Putin. Quote, of course, such decisions cannot be made without the head of state, and it is Putin's decision, Peskov told reporters in Moscow on Monday. However, he declined to comment on al-Assad's specific whereabouts and said Putin was not planning to meet with him just yet. They have granted him political asylum. I see a lot of people joking, going, you know, the new hot podcast is going to be Snowden and Bashar al-Assad, which is very funny, but also totally possible. Bashar al-Assad spent years as an eye doctor in London. He speaks English incredibly well. It could actually we could actually see a podcast like that, but we'll get into what exactly, again, happened in Syria and where it goes from here. After all, Assad, I guess it depends on what you mean by democracy. Not the most democratic leader. His father ruled before him. The Assad family had ruled Syria for about 54 years at the point that Assad abdicated, ran away. Again, we'll have to get back into that. But speaking of things that aren't democracies, Zelensky rejects peace call from Trump. Zelensky rejects Trump's peace call. That's a headline from Infowars.com. Ukrainian leader Vladimir Zelensky has rejected a call by U.S. President-elect Donald Trump for an immediate truce and peace talks between Ukraine and Russia. Following a meeting between Trump, Zelensky, and French President Emmanuel Macron in Paris on Saturday, the president-elect issued a lengthy post on his Truth social platform saying there should be an immediate ceasefire and negotiations should begin to settle the Ukrainian conflict. According to Trump, Ukraine would like to make a deal and stop the madness. However, Zelensky made it clear that this is not the case, and even longer post published on X on Sunday in which he said the conflict simply cannot end with a piece of paper and a few signatures, which of course is exactly how it could end. That's actually exactly how it could end. It's how it could have ended 2 years ago, and it could end tomorrow, but he doesn't want to, so yeah, we'll get back to that. Meanwhile, Jay-Z accused of raping 13-year-old girl with Diddy as unnamed female celebrity watched. This is a new lawsuit filed in civic court, I believe. The lawsuit was first filed in October, but did not list Jay-Z, whose given name is Sean Carter, by name until an amended complaint was filed on Sunday, NBC News first reported. The plaintiff, listed as Jane Doe, alleges that Carter and Combs drugged her and subsequently took advantage of her in turns while an unnamed female celebrity watched in year 2000 at a house party in Manhattan after the MTV Video Music Awards. According to an amended complaint with Huffington Post, which Huffington Post obtained at the time, she was 13 years old, and Carter and Combs would have both been about 31 years old. And we'll get into this, but the rap music blackmail scheme is unraveling. And people, there's a lot of people going, I told you Jay-Z was next. If you didn't know, Jay-Z was at the heart of the faux Illuminati, again, rap music blackmail ring. You haven't been paying attention. They've been signaling this for a very long time, and it's really not subtle. We'll get a little bit more into that, as it doesn't just pertain to the rap music game, but politics and general entertainment as well. Finally, we have this. Daniel Penny show trial. Judge allows prosecution to swap out charge in bid to secure a conviction. So we've been giving you updates on this throughout the trial, but over the last week, the jury could not come to a conclusion, and it was largely just at a deadlock. But Judge Maxwell Wiley on Friday went along with a bizarre proposal from Manhattan Assistant District Attorney Danfa Yoren to avoid a mistrial by allowing her to drop a manslaughter charge against Daniel Penny to try to secure a conviction on a lesser charge of criminally negligent homicide. So basically, just at the last minute, failing to prove your case, failing to convince a jury of 12 people to convict unanimously, and so they're just changing the charge at the last minute. That seems utterly unjust to me, but reeks of desperation on behalf of Daphna Yoren. Quote, I'll take a chance and grant the people's application, Judge Wiley said after the prosecution asked to dismiss the manslaughter charge against Penny because jurors could not agree on a verdict. The judge added, normally, the distinction between the two counts is very clear. This justification adds another element to it, which is at play here. Jurors will now have to deliberate on the second charge against the veteran, negligent homicide, which has a punishment of up to 4 years. Penny's lawyer had opposed the prosecution motion, saying this has never been done before. I would encourage prosecutors to overcharge in the grand jury with the option of withdrawing if hung under coercion. Apparently, manslaughter charge has been dismissed. So, again, you know, just like it's happened at InfoWars, just like it happened with Donald Trump, when the law doesn't actually say that the person should be punished, when the law is a barrier to the designs of these psychos in the Justice Department, they just change it or ignore it. With Trump, it was taking something that was a misdemeanor and upping it to a felony and eliminating the, expiration time, the statute of limitations, just, you know, so that something that would never normally be charged, a person that would never normally be even, you know, in court, let alone convicted. Well, suddenly you shift some things around and you can get what you want, which is a symbol, a lynching, a trophy for the anti-white establishment. And we've showed you some clips of old urine. But we could show you more. It's absolutely brutal. Unfair and unjust what's happening to Daniel Penny. And at the end of the day, if they actually pull this off and manage to change the charge around at the last minute, I mean, it may work. They may get Daniel Penny behind bars. I think it'll be overturned eventually. And I think they know that, but it almost doesn't matter to them. They just want the symbol. They just want him convicted. They want his life to be made miserable for the next few years. Eventually it'll get overturned and it'll be proven, you know, that the way they went about this was totally illegitimate and fraudulent. But will they pay any price? Will they go to jail? You know, at the end of it, you know, ruining man's reputation, stealing years of his life totally unfairly, derailing his entire life because he chose to be a good Samaritan and step in when a violent psychopath was threatening people on a train. But will the people that do it to Daniel Penny be punished? No. And they'll just move on. They'll just move right on. Again, we can get back into that a little bit later as well. We'll be taking your calls throughout the show. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com to support everything that we do here on InfoWars. Thealexjonesstore.com. It's the best place to get Christmas presents or prepare for your New Year's resolutions by getting the supplements that you need. Christmas picks are up now. Just tons of awesome Christmas sweaters with the InfoWars design. There's also the Trump on a stump, like elf on a shelf but a little Trump doll to hang on your tree, which is just awesome and would make a fantastic gift for the Trump supporter in your life. But of course, there's also some more subtle sweaters and things up there so that you can still rep InfoWars and support us in a little bit more subtle of a way. There's also the fundraiser silver coins that I was showing off to you last week. They just came in. The designs are incredible. They're even better in real life. You can get them now for a limited time discount of 25% off. It's a fundraiser silver coin with the unique original design with 1984 versus 1776, 1984 on one side and 1776 on the other. I don't know which one's heads and which one's tails. I don't know. You can flip the coin and say, call it 84 or 76. Which one wins? All right, let's get into what happened in Syria. That's the headline from Al Jazeera. What happened in Syria? How did al-Assad fall? In the early hours of Sunday morning, opposition forces declared Syria liberated from the rule of President Bashar al-Assad as opposition forces surged into the capital. The former president in question reportedly fled Damascus with no information yet as to which country will receive him. Well, this must have been published a little while ago. He is in Moscow now. He has claimed asylum in Russia. The former president fled. The stunning collapse of more than 53 years of al-Assad family rule has been described as a historic moment nearly 14 years after Syrians rose in peaceful protest against a government that met them with violence that quickly spiraled into a bloody civil war. Just a week ago, the regime still maintained control over significant portions of the country. So how did it all unravel so quickly? Well, it began on November 27th when a coalition of opposition fighters launched a major offensive against pro-government forces. The first attack came at the front line between opposition-held Idlib and the neighboring governorate of Aleppo. 3 days later, the opposition forces took Syria's second-largest city, Aleppo. They then moved on to Hama and then Homs. And by Sunday morning, they were on the outskirts of Damascus with most Syrian military just sort of leaving their posts and running away, many of them running across the Iraqi border and being absorbed into the Iraqi armed forces. It's pretty wild. It is pretty crazy what just happened. An 8-day blitzkrieg, essentially, with a horde of terrorists storming their way all the way to Damascus, despite being unable to do so in, you know, something like 8 to 11 years of attempts, stopping around 2020. So around 2020, the Syrian war seemed like it had come largely to a close. There were still pockets of rebel-controlled areas, but not a lot of movement, and it didn't seem to be a big threat to the Assad regime. And for 4 years, it remained like that until this sudden, unexpected, and devastating attack against the regime there. This is bad. Let me just wrap it up in a single sentence. This is not a good thing. Like so many times in the Middle East, you have Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein or some, you know, strong-armed leader that oppresses his own people and is not the most kind to opposition voices, but you remove them and you find out what the alternative is, and it is total, absolute chaos, like in Libya, open-air slave markets, just ruled by terror groups. Now, the group that took over Syria this time, HTS, is an offshoot of Al-Qaeda or Al-Nusra Front. The leader is still, to this day, listed on official U.S. government websites as being a wanted terrorist with a prize of $10 million for his head. And yet he's being treated almost like a savior of Syria, basically in order to retain some or to gain some legitimacy as the rulers of Syria. They're basically pretending to be like love diversity and to be moderates. They are, of course, not. And we're already seeing Christians in the region being rounded up and abused. Tons of incredible videos come out about this, including rebels storming and looking around Assad and Assad's brothers' homes, including massive, very sophisticated tunnel systems beneath their homes. It's absolutely fascinating. Let's go now to clip number six to give you a little rundown of who the players are, where they are, where they're going, and just a quick overview to catch you up. And we'll 26, and we can start about 1 minute into the video. This is from AI Telly on YouTube. Let's watch.
Complex and fragmented conflict. It is crucial to understand the territorial control among the key players on the ground. Four primary factions dominate different areas of the country, each backed by varying external powers and ideologies. The Syrian government forces, marked in red on many conflict maps, represent the Bashar al-Assad regime's primary military apparatus. These forces are supported by the National Defense Forces, a pro-government paramilitary group. The Assad regime also benefits from the significant backing of Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah, whose combined efforts have fortified and sustained its control over large swaths of territory, particularly in central and western Syria. The Syrian Democratic Forces, SDF, represented in yellow, consists largely of Kurdish fighters. This group, backed by the United States, controls much of eastern Syria, including areas rich in oil reserves. The SDF has played a critical role in the fight against ISIS and continues to manage regions under its control with the support of its international allies. HDS and other allied rebel factions, shown in green, operate primarily in the northwest. HDS, an evolution of the Al-Nusra Front, previously aligned with Al-Qaeda until severing ties in 2016, remains a dominant force in this region. Despite internal divisions, HDS maintains significant influence over the territories it controls. In the north, Turkish-backed rebel forces, including the Syrian National Army, hold ground along the Turkish border. Turkey has supported these groups as part of its broader strategy to counter Kurdish influence and establish a buffer zone. These areas, often marked in different shades of green, reflect Turkey's active involvement in the Syrian conflict. Meanwhile, these patches of the Islamic State or Daesh-dominated territory still persist in some isolated desert regions, a stark reminder that the group's threat has not been entirely eradicated. Finally, in the south, additional rebel groups maintain a presence, and the Golan Heights adds a further layer of complexity. Israel claims sovereignty over this territory, citing its capture during the 1967 Six-Day War, while Arab nations and the broader international community often regard it as occupied territory. Understanding these dynamics is key to grasping the intricacies of Syria's civil war. If you have any thoughts or additional questions about the situation, feel free to share them in the comments section below. On November 27, Syrian opposition armed groups launched a sudden and audacious offensive that took many by surprise. This operation was spearheaded by Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, commonly abbreviated as ATS. Known for its strategic capabilities, HTS and its allied rebel forces in northwest Syria swiftly advanced through the western countryside of Aleppo. Their rapid progress underscored the intensity and effectiveness of their offensive as they overcame resistance with remarkable ease. The momentum of the attack did not wane in Aleppo. Instead, the rebel forces pushed further south and southwest, extending their campaign into new territories. This continued offensive brought them significant gains, including control over areas in Hama province. To simplify this complicated civil war, let's draw a line and divide each side. On one side, Iran, Russia, and Hezbollah support the Bashar al-Assad regime. On the other side, the U.S. government supports the Kurds. Just below, we have another group, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, which support the rebel groups. Then there's ISIS, and everyone seems to be fighting against them. However, Turkey is also fighting against the Kurds, which
creates it's a very tangled web, folks. Again, we'll help to untangle it on the other side. Stay with us.
I talk a lot about the great successes InfoWars has had. I don't think anybody can deny it. And it is because of listeners and viewers supporting us. But when we talk about the crew at InfoWars, people behind the scenes, the researchers, the writers, they really have been the MVPs in this fight. And when we look at Harrison Smith and Owen Schroyer and the hard work they engage in every day, 5, 6, 7 days a week, it's really just incredible. So for myself and the whole InfoWars crew, I thank you for your past support. I only encourage you now to realize that InfoWars cannot stay on air if you do not support us. I know you spread the word. I know you pray for us, and that's wonderful. Keep doing it. But most viewers and listeners never go to InfoWarsStore.com, and you never buy great products that enrich and empower your life while at the same time keep us on air. I know that less than 1% of our listeners actually go buy products at InfoWarsStore.com.
If just 1% more of you took action and went to InfoWarsStore.com, our funding problems will be over. Please take action now.
A new extremely important product is now available exclusively at the AlexJonesStore.com, Ultimate Probiotic. This is a private label, but even made stronger, of one of the top, highly recommended, highly rated brands out there today. And it's more than just a probiotic. It's got a whole bunch of known natural ingredients that boost your overall gut health and that detoxify and that helps flush out all the garbage in your body. Ladies and gentlemen, with all the attacks on our bodies, you have to understand that the gut is the front line. And if you don't have a strong gut, it's like not having a front door on your house or an engine in your car. The gut is so important. Probiotics are amazing and are documented for their great effects. Get this high-quality probiotic right now, Ultimate Probiotic, 60 billion, at thealexjonesstore.com. And I want to thank you for your support. Now take action at thealexjonesstore.com. And again, I thank you for your support. Ladies and gentlemen, InfoWars is back on the air. The judge is having emergency hearings. Looks like their fraudulent sale won't go through. But regardless, I'm suing the daylights out of the Democratic Party and the big national gun control group that's actually behind The Onion and has now admitted it in court. So, we also have backup studios, the Alex Jones Network. Whatever they do, we're staying on air to make sure Trump gets into office and to back him and his agenda to stop World War III, secure the borders, and more. But we can't do it without your support. So there are all these new, amazing, incredible designs up on TheAlexJonesStore.com. It has nothing to do with InfoWars. Not owned by me, so they can never get that. That's how we stay on the air, even if they're successful in shutting us down. If you go to TheAlexJonesStore.com and you get great supplements, t-shirts, limited edition collectible fundraiser posters, and more, you will keep me on the air regardless of the Alex Jones Network. Please go to the site now, TheAlexJonesStore.com, and keep us on air. They're amazing products. Thank you so much for taking action. You are the resistance. My fellow patriots, there are a lot of amazing Patriot Gear supplements, you name it, at thealexjonesstore.com. But we've now added a whole bunch of other really cool items. There are a bunch of amazing campaign coins for InfoWars, for 1776, for the fight for liberty on the site as low as $9.99. Some of the challenge coins are $14.97. They're great fundraisers for us. They have a lot of weight in them. They look great. They're great conversation starters, great gifts, great keepsakes, mementos, and you know that you've supported the InfoWar. So I want to thank you all for your past support and encourage you now to go to TheAlexJonesStore.com, our amazing sponsor that will keep us on air one way or the other. If InfoWars get shut down, that's okay because they're a great sponsor. They're not owned by me, and the bad guys won't be able to shut down TheAlexJonesStore.com. So go there for the campaign coins and so much more today and keep me in the fight. Thank you so much for your support.
InfoWars.com is tomorrow's news today.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, folks. We're going to continue to break down what happened in Syria, the fall of the Assad regime, and where it goes from here. First, again, another just, you know, catching up to speed on what exactly happened and where this force came from that's overthrown Syria in 8 days. Just absolutely incredible. Let's go to clip number 28 now.
These are the key players.
Bashar al-Assad's family is Syria's main political dynasty, ruthlessly ruling the country for over 50 years. Assad took over from his father in 2000. 11 years later, he faced a major challenge to his rule from largely peaceful protesters associated with the Arab Spring. His crackdown against them evolved into a full-scale civil war. The opposition forces that recaptured Aleppo are led by a group called Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS. It controlled nearly all of nearby Idlib province. Initially an offshoot of al-Qaeda, lately its leader, Abu Muhammad al-Jalani, has been talking about religious tolerance.
He told CNN his goal is to topple Assad and create a government for all Syrians.
Five foreign countries have a military presence in Syria: the United States, Turkey, Iran, Russia, and Israel.
This analyst says it was Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon that upended the situation in Syria.
Hezbollah, the group which supported Assad for many years, had to remove and relocate some of its forces and fighters as well as assets back to Lebanon in order to protect its territories there against an Israeli offensive.
Russia has long supported Assad's regime, and that doesn't seem to have changed yet. It joined the Syrian government forces in fierce airstrikes on Aleppo and other areas.
Russia has air and naval bases in Syria, which it uses to project its influence across the region. But Vladimir Putin's debilitating war in Ukraine may make it harder for him to help Assad, as he did in the past.
Whatever victories Russia was able to achieve in the past, whether those are military victories or symbolic slash political victories, those were temporary. Now we are in a different phase when it comes to its ability to project power.
Iran is also supporting Assad and has sent its militias to help fight the rebels. Then there's Turkey, which backs groups of rebels near its border with Syria and wants millions of Syrian refugees inside Turkey to be returned. The United States supports the Kurdish Syrian Democratic Forces, who want autonomy within Syria, which Turkey's government opposes.
So, like I said, an extremely tangled web. But suffice it to say that the axis of resistance has been severed into the axis of resistance, or what, from the Israeli perspective, they call the Shia Crescent, is the force of aligned states that previously went from Iran to Iraq to Syria to Lebanon all the way to Gaza, really. And this provided for a corridor where you could ship weapons or move troops and move people. Since they were all aligned, if you've got, you know, Iranian supplies that need to get to Hezbollah in Lebanon, they would ship it through Syria. Well, now with Syria having fallen, that is a major piece of that, you know, major link in that chain broken, meaning that, you know, Hezbollah has been cut off from support from Iran, unless they have a tunnel system that goes under the entirety of Syria, which I don't think they do, because it's huge. It is a huge area. So what does this mean? Where does it go from here? Well, it means total chaos. It means absolute collapse. It means having a terrorist in charge of a country that was previously, however, you know, brutal the government was, it wasn't ISIS. And it actually provided for some religious diversity in the country, including large pockets of Christians. Something like 10% of the Syrian population is Christian, as they have been since shortly after Jesus walked around there. Assad himself was a member of the Alawite community, which is a Shia Muslim sect. The HTS terrorist organization is Sunni. It means they're backed by Turkey and Saudi Arabia. It's almost like it's almost impossible to know where to even begin with all of this, since it is so intertwined and there are so many different countries at play and movements within those different countries. I mean, in a way, I could go back to shortly after the First World War and talk about the Young Turks and Ataturk, who's the founding father of modern Turkey, and the way that he established very strict delineation between the government and the military, so that the military would never be influenced by religious radicals in the country, and how Erdogan basically undid that and has weaponized the Turkish military in a way that is at odds with its initial founding. Like, all of that's extremely important when you consider Turkey's role in all of this and their previous role as the heartland of the Ottoman Empire, and that they're trying to recreate that essentially. But we don't. But maybe we don't go back 100 years. Maybe we'll focus on just what's happening right now. This story is from Information Liberation. Syrian government falls to ISIS and Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists. The U.S. State Department in the past condemned HTS as terrorists, but now they're being rebranded as diversity-friendly jihadists. That's right. Yeah, they're jihadists, but they also love diversity. Rebel terrorists a week ago credited Israel's attacks on Syria and Hezbollah for their shock advance and professed their love for the Jewish state. Quote, nobody knows if Iran and the Syrian regime would have been weakened without the recent Israeli attacks in Syria, which have allowed us to return and free the lands and the country, an opposition activist told Israel's Khan public broadcaster. And Israel has, of course, seized on this to capture more territory in the Golan Heights and around that area. In fact, we have a statement, I believe, clip number 11. Here's Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel announcing that they are capturing territory from Syria. Let's watch.
This is a historic day for the Middle East. The collapse of the Assad regime, the tyranny in Damascus, offers great opportunity, but also is fraught with significant dangers. This collapse is a direct result of our forceful action against Hezbollah and Iran, Assad's main supporters. It set off a chain reaction of all those who want to free themselves from this tyranny and its oppression. But it also means we have to take action against possible threats. One of them is the collapse of the Separation of Forces Agreement from 1974 between Israel and Syria. This agreement held for 50 years. Last night it collapsed. The Syrian army abandoned its positions. We gave the Israeli army the order to take over these positions to ensure that no hostile force embeds itself right next to the border of Israel. This is a temporary defensive position until a suitable arrangement is found. Equally, we send a hand of peace to all those beyond our border in Syria, to the Druze, to the Kurds, to the Christians, and to the Muslims who want to live in peace with Israel. We're going to follow events very carefully. If we can establish neighborly relations and a peaceful relations with the new forces emerging in Syria, that's our desire. But if we do not, we'll do whatever it takes to defend the state of Israel and the border of Israel.
And of course, they have launched airstrikes on Syrian weapons caches. America as well launched something like 75 bombing raids yesterday. And it seems like an extremely convenient way to wage proxy war is you have a sovereign country like Syria with leadership, however despotic, that have been there for 50 years, supported by, you know, international allies like Iran and Russia. You overthrow that by using ISIS, and then you go, well, this is ISIS controls the country. We have to invade now. They're so bad, we have to invade, even though it was us and our funding and our training that created and compelled ISIS in the first place. The very tangled and twisted web of alliances here is interesting. Turkey is, of course, a member of NATO, but they're also at odds with America when it comes to the Kurds. They're also Sunni Muslim, which is allied with Saudi Arabia. And a lot of people pointing to Israel and the Greater Israel Project as being behind this, which there's certainly, you know, something to that, especially how this whole conflict really got going over the last year. But I think it has more to do with not necessarily Greater Israel, but just Israel itself. As we explained when this rebel group first started moving, just a little over a week ago, we pointed out that it was exactly the same time that the ceasefire with Hezbollah was announced, despite the fact that Israel seems bent on ignoring the terms of its own ceasefire as soon as they make it and continue to bomb Hezbollah. Either way, it keeps Hezbollah bogged down in Lebanon, so they can't actually help assist Assad. And Assad would have fallen a long, long time ago without Hezbollah being able to assist in defense against the so-called rebels and ISIS there. So we said when this first started, it looks like they're doing a ceasefire with Hezbollah to focus on getting rid of Assad, to cut off Hezbollah from supplies so that Israel can sort of end the ceasefire and finish up with Hezbollah, because the north of Israel is completely depopulated. All the Israelis have fled because of the threat of Hezbollah, and they're displaced refugees in their own country, over 100,000 of them, whole north area completely depopulated, totally, you know, not producing anything, totally unproductive while everybody has fled. And the people there have said, we're not going to go back until Hezbollah is taken care of. Israel tries to do an incursion, tries to invade. It basically totally fails. But the people still won't go back. They have the ceasefire, take out Syria, cut off Hezbollah from not only cut off Hezbollah from supplies from Iran through Syria, through this axis of resistance, Shia Crescent there, but also put pressure on Lebanon, as likely the terrorist groups that just took over Syria will try to invade Lebanon next. And they'll have to defend in the north at a certain pass, totally outnumbered to a massive degree. And I put out a post on X. People thought it was like a joke. Somebody replied, like, in this analogy, who are the Phoenicians? And it's like, no, I'm illustrating that what's happening here is like not anything new. It's practically as old as humanity itself when you frame what's going on in terms of the sort of ancient designations of these places. This is the Neo-Ottoman Empire unleashing hordes of Islamo-Turkish barbarians, basically, from everywhere, from the Uyghurs and, I mean, all of Central Asia, Afghanistan, all these. You can funnel these through Turkey, unleash them on the Assyrians in order to cut off and isolate the Phoenicians, Lebanon being the modern label of the Phoenician lands. Like, this is literally, this happened 4,000 years ago, and it's happening again. The numbers of the Turkish invaders will just overwhelm any attempt to resist them. But again, the really bizarre part about this is that this guy who runs HTS is being touted as some sort of like good person, Abu Muhammad al-Golani, the leader of the Syrian insurgency. And this guy, you can still find posters, wanted posters of him on official, you know, State Department websites saying $10 million for this terrorist leader for crimes against humanity. But now he's being portrayed like some sort of, you know, bringer of freedom, liberator of Syria. I have my suspicions. Again, from Information Liberation, the Telegraph touts the diversity-friendly jihadist tearing through Syria. The headline from the Telegraph says, how Syria's diversity-friendly jihadists plan on building a state. Which would seem ironic and just fractured somehow, but not when you know what they actually mean by diversity. Diversity. You know, if you have nothing but Sunni Muslims, that is diverse, according to the current definition, misdefinition of the word. The Israeli-loving jihadists with links to ISIS and al-Qaeda who are tearing through Syria are diversity-friendly and believe diversity is a strength, according to the Telegraph. Israeli lobby mouthpiece Aaron Y. Zelen of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy had an article in the Telegraph on Tuesday titled, How Syria's Diversity-Friendly Jihadists Plan on Building a State. Zelen made the case for backing Islamic terrorists in their war to overthrow Syrian President Bashar al-Assad by insisting that Abu Muhammad al-Jolani, the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham HTS leader, who served in both al-Qaeda and the Islamic State, has split from the groups, rejected their extreme tactics, and is now a champion of diversity, equity, and inclusion. He is the Syrian Zelensky, the champion of democracy that won't hold elections. Yes, the champion of diversity that's on a ruthless jihad. It's incredible. Abu al-Jolani, the HTS leader, has a $10 million U.S. bounty on his head. He joined both al-Qaeda and the Islamic State before splitting from both groups and rejecting their extreme tactics, I'm sure. Jolani has attempted to improve his reputation in the eyes of the West. In 2021, he gave an interview to PBS, the U.S. state-funded broadcaster, calling the designation of HTS as a terrorist group unfair and political. He's been lobbying for his terrorist network to be removed from the U.S.'s list of foreign terrorist organizations for at least 2 years now. even looks a little bit like Zelensky. It's very strange. So where does this go from here, and how does this play into the wider World War III conflict? Well, apparently one of the reasons why this blitzkrieg was so successful is they were using drones that have so far only been seen on the Ukrainian battlefields, meaning they're likely being supplied by Ukraine or by NATO through Turkey. And you have a sort of a similar conflict going on between Ukraine and Russia and Syria and its rebels, with the legitimate, however, you know, non-democratic government being overthrown by rebels who are friendly with the U.S. and Israel and NATO, basically just causing chaos and strife and misery, for which we benefit in some tangential way. Of course, we don't ever benefit for any of this stuff, but we, in the sense of the American foreign policy designs. This is from CSIS.org. Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. HTS is the Organization for the Liberation of the Levant, traces its beginnings to the outset of the Syrian civil war and has remained a dangerous opposition force throughout the duration of this conflict. In May 2018, the group was added to the State Department's existing designation of its predecessor, the al-Qaeda affiliate al-Nusra, as a foreign terrorist organization. Today, HTS can be thought of as a relatively localized Syrian terrorist organization, which retains Salafi jihadist ideology despite its public split from al-Qaeda in 2017. The backgrounder provides an overview of the history, leadership, and current strategies of HTS. So again, this is just, you know, practically official American, you know, foreign policy designation. They are essentially al-Qaeda. Christians in Syria are, of course, at risk now. They were protected by the Assad regime to a very large degree, but no longer already. There's videos coming out of Christians being captured by these Islamic terrorists. Clip number 7 is that. Go ahead and play it. You see, you know, people with their hands behind their back, huddled up against a wall, while the terrorists step on their heads and backs and abuse them. Yeah, brutal stuff, and that probably awaits the rest of Syrian Christians. From Infowars.com, Syria's Assad resigns amid peace efforts, orders peaceful power handover, according to the Russian Foreign Ministry. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, after negotiations with several participants in the conflict in Syria, has decided to step down from his position and leave the country, giving instructions for a peaceful transfer of power, the Russian Foreign Ministry reported. As a result of negotiations between Assad and several participants in the armed conflict on the territory of the Syrian Arab Republic, he has made the decision to resign from the presidency and leave the country, giving instructions for a peaceful transfer of power. So again, I think this does have a lot to do with what's happening in Syria, in Israel, rather. Obviously, Israel is capturing land. They're engaged in bombing campaigns throughout Syria, basically saying we don't want these weapon caches to fall into the hands of the Islamic terrorists. But the whole reason that the Islamic terrorists even succeeded was that Israel was bombing the Assad regime pretty regularly, including things like Damascus Airport, for the last year. Well, really ever since the Syrian civil war, so-called civil war, mostly foreigners, foreign-funded, foreign-trained. This is a foreign invasion, a multinational one. But certainly over the last year, they've been hitting Syria pretty heavily, and the HTS spokesmen themselves say, you know, this wouldn't have been possible without Israel's support with their, you know, air power crippling Syria in the time when they need to defend themselves. So Israel bombs Syria, weakens it, distracts it. They're bombing Lebanon, forcing Hezbollah to defend Lebanon rather than getting involved in Syria like they had over the last decade or so. And then they're now bombing the weapons caches even more because they don't want them to fall into the hands of the people who are in charge of Syria now as a result of their bombing of the weapon caches before. So wrap your mind around that one. Meanwhile, calls grow for Syrian refugees in Europe to return home after Assad's fall. After all, most of the – something like one out of every 20 Syrian people in the world, like one out of every 20 Syrians live in Germany now, half of them subsisting entirely on welfare, all because they say that if they were to go back to Syria, the Assad regime would persecute them. Well, now that the Assad regime is down, there's no excuse to resist repatriation, although that won't happen anytime soon, I don't think. And in fact, we'll probably just see even more refugees out of Syria funneled through Turkey into the rest of Europe. And that's the other thing that we need to understand, is that the Sunni Muslims are not a friend of the West. The so-called West, the interests being fought for by our government, NATO and the Israeli government, I mean, they're completely at odds with the well-being of people in the West anyway, citizen of the West regardless. But part of this, if you zoom out and look at the whole world map and extend the timeline over decades, it looks like the Sunni, you know, reborn Ottoman Caliphate slash Saudi Arabian Wahhabist terror networks have spent the last decade embedding themselves by the tens of millions in Europe. And while you have this Shia opposition in the Middle East, if you can weaken and destroy that, that's essentially shoring up your rear so that you can then advance westward, meaning you've got 10 million sleeper cells in Europe waiting for activation, radicals, Muslim radicals trained by Wahhabis and thousands of mosques and teaching centers throughout Europe, ready to attack and take on Europe like the Muslims have been trying to do for the last 1,000 years. So this is very bad for everything that we in the West actually want our countries back. We want the refugees so-called returned. We want peace in the Middle East and safety for Christians in the area. And it looks like all of that has been made significantly more difficult by what's happened over the last 8 days. Israel claims credit for al-Assad's ouster, but sees risks in his absence. It's not really a risk. All it means is you've gotten rid of the moderate leadership, turned the whole thing over to what is essentially ISIS, and now they have the excuse they need to go to war. All of this, of course, being done rapidly, so it can get finished before Trump gets into office, leaving him with a giant quagmire. We'll be back to that on the other side. Stay with us.
Now, the one thing I want you to do, if I could ask you to do anything for America and Alex and this network and this crew, the one thing I would ask you to do, go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and sign up for Alex Jones VIP Club. It's $30 a month, but you get $40 in store credit. So if you're going to buy a $35 shirt, you might as well sign up for the VIP Club so that you can get that extra $10 and just get the shirt that you want. That is going to ensure that we can fund this operation, fund the next operation, and ensure that Alex always has a voice. They can try to steal his identity. They can try to steal his business. They can try to steal America. They can try to sacrifice humanity in nuclear genocide. But if you go to thealexjonesstore.com and sign up for Alex Jones VIP Club, they'll never take away our voice. They'll never take away our freedom. They'll never take away free speech, and we can save America together. Please go now and be the reason Alex Jones will always be on the air.
America is waking up to the sad and painful fact that we've been under a multinational, globalist, deep state intelligence agency controlled coup for decades in this country. They didn't have full control 30, 40 years ago, but they're really attempting full control now, and that's where we are. And InfoWars has engaged in the best long-term analysis of the enemy operation and predicted the resistance movement would form against it and the fact that we would have major successes against the enemy, but they would then double, triple, quadruple down. That's where we are now. So it's more important than ever that InfoWars stay on the air. I just want to thank you all for your support and spread the word. It's more important than ever that we get funding. We're trying to make it easier for you to fund us by simply going to InfoWarsStore.com and getting great products that enrich you and your family's lives. I want to just encourage you all to not forget that without you, we won't be here. So please go to InfoWarsStore.com today, and I thank you.
Infowars.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, folks. We're going to play a time lapse here of a map. This is the Syrian Civil War from 2011 to 2020. And it'll just give you an idea of how this whole thing unfolded in extremely rapid time-lapse form. Here you can see the Syrian rebel groups, again, so-called, just picture all of these with air quotes around them, the green splotches sort of popping up there around the borders of Lebanon and Turkey, as well as a few sort of off to the northeast near Iraq. So we've seen about a year's worth of war here in this time-lapse so far. And there the green really starts to push in from the northwest out of Turkey, pushing further and further down. This is again 2012, the end of 2012. We're now in 2013 when the rebel forces get out of Iraq, conquered basically all of Syria. But then you get the birth of ISIS. ISIS is in black here, and they make really rapid gains throughout all of the rebel-held territory. And you'll see as they absolutely balloon over 2014 and 15. Here we're already in, we're still in a, now we're in 2014, and that's when everything really, really starts to pop off. But you'll see as it, you know, gains just massive territorial grabs here and throughout Iraq all the way down through Syria. So again, this big black blob is ISIS, which basically took advantage of the work done by the American-backed so-called moderate rebels to conquer huge swaths of Syria. This continues through 2015. We're in April of 2015 now. And again, you still see some advancements with rebel groups, but rebel and ISIS largely interchangeable. And wherever a rebel force takes over, ISIS quickly swoops in and conquers back. Al-Nusra Front now getting in the mix as well, but again, just a different label for what is essentially ISIS, Sunni radical Muslims. This goes up until 2016. We're now in 2016 when things will start to change a little bit as Trump gets into office and actually goes after ISIS rather than just trying to use them as a tool. So you can see how small the Syrian government-controlled area has gotten by this point. And yet it all starts getting pushed back. And by August 2017, ISIS is got half of what they had before. You also have the large Kurdish-controlled area in the bright yellow there, with Turkey taking over some of the areas of so-called al-Qaeda, which became HTS before the assault here. So now ISIS has been eliminated as of 2018. That's what Trump always brags about. And you saw how massive ISIS got there for a while. And now it's basically calmed down except for a patch of rebels in the southeast of Syria and the al-Qaeda slash Turkish controlled area in the northwest. And this goes on. And you can see it's sort of, cleaning up a little bit. The Syrian government has retained and regained most of its land, with Turkey battling the Kurds and the Kurds battling Syria, and more little pockets of resistance around Lebanon. But it continues to grow the Syrian government-controlled areas. And it sort of calmed down, and there you have March 15th, 2020, and that's where that map ended, and that's where a lot of the changes ended in 2020. And it basically stayed like this for 4 years until that little patch of periwinkle in blue slid between al-Qaeda and Turkey, rebranded it as HTS and launched their jihad blitzkrieg to take over all of Syria in 8 days. Again, really, really mind-blowing stuff, and it represents a major, major sea change in the Middle East in exactly the same way that the Iraq war and the fall of Saddam Hussein brought about a major change in the Middle East and eventually led to ISIS. So we'll get back into this and take your calls on this topic in the next hour. We also have the interview given by Trump So we want to show you some clips from, and we'll talk a little bit about, you know, domestic policy as well, but focusing largely on the Syrian conflict and how it plays into World War III.
My fellow patriots, there are a lot of amazing Patriot gear, supplements, you name it, at thealexjonesstore.com. But we've now added a whole bunch of other really cool items. There are a bunch of amazing campaign coins for InfoWars, for 1776, for the fight for liberty on the site as low as $9.99. Some of the challenge coins are $14.97. They're great fundraisers for us. They have a lot of weight in them. They look great. They're great conversation starters, great gifts, great keepsakes, mementos, and you know that you've supported the InfoWar. So I want to thank you all for your past support and encourage you now to go to thealexjonesstore.com, our amazing sponsor that will keep us on air one way or the other. If InfoWars get shut down, that's okay, because they're a great sponsor. They're not owned by me, and the bad guys won't be able to shut down thealexjonesstore.com. So go there for the campaign coins and so much more today, and keep me in the fight. Thank you so much for your support.
The media's watchdog and America's voice. You're on The American Journal.
Hey, welcome back, folks. We're going to take your calls on what's happening in the Middle East. Ask my Middle Eastern InfoWars is what do you call him? Middle Eastern correspondent Lebanon John call in. Throughout all of this, there's been a lot of people that have been like, it's kind of weird, like Scott Ritter, pretty much on the ball with most stuff in the Middle East. But if you go back about a week, he's downplaying HTS and basically saying there's no way Syria is going to fall. This will all, you know, fizzle out. Russia won't allow it. Russia's too powerful to let this happen. Like, it seems like no matter how well somebody knows the Middle East, there's just something about it that's totally unpredictable, and they're going to be wrong at one point or another. But I got to give credit, and, you know, it's not just credit, but also, you know, a statement to the audience that, like, John from Lebanon, Lebanon John, has pretty much nailed it more than any other person on CNN or MSNBC or Al Jazeera or Scott Ritter and anybody on the dissident, you know, side of things. And I swear, and I've said this ever since I've done the show, when you look at the Middle East from the perspective of Lebanon, things just make a lot more sense. It's really interesting, especially because you never get the Lebanese perspective in the mainstream media. If you read, you know, what people are saying about this now, it's about Greater Israel. It's, you know, interpretations of what happened with Syria. It's talking about Turkey. And it's always kind of this afterthought of like, oh, and this is affecting Hezbollah too. Or, oh, yeah, and it's because, you know, the bombing campaign against Hezbollah was so effective that they weren't able to, you know, help Syria. It's kind of this afterthought. But if you look at it from the Lebanese perspective, like take them as the main character and look at how all of this plays in, you get a completely different interpretation of how and why all of this is going on. And it seems to me to be a more accurate one. And it's how we've been able to predict with almost, you know, total certainty and accuracy how all of this is going to unfold. And one of the things you have to realize is the exclusion of Lebanon is deliberate in a lot of cases. It's like we were saying since the beginning, like, Hezbollah is the big player in this. That's the player that Israel is really concerned about. And a lot of the moves that Israel is making are predicated on that understanding. But if nobody talks about it, nobody, you know, reports on that, and the, you know, Israeli spokespeople don't make that obvious, it's easy to miss that aspect of the decisions. And then the decisions don't seem like they make a lot of sense. So I wanted John from Lebanon to call in and give us the breakdown of what exactly's happened here and where it goes from here. I believe he's on the line. John, do you hear me?
Yes.
So I've been trying to break down and give just sort of a background as to how this blitzkrieg took place. But looking into the future, I mean, what happens now?
Yeah, so should we do a quick recap for the just for those who might not know?
Sure.
Okay, so the Syrian government was kind of excluded from the greater Arabic world, was basically saved by Russia and Iran. Iran is not technically Arab. The government in Syria is called a Ba'athist, which is a similar type of regime as Saddam Hussein. They're called Ba'ath. These guys have an ideology called pan-Arabism. It's an old ideology that is totally defunct and outdated, and they were just kind of clinging on to this concept of pan-Arabism. So he wanted to be cool with the Arabs. The Arabs told him, if you stop being cool with Iran, we'll turn ISIS off. ISIS can be turned on and off. Erdogan in Turkey said, we can resolve all our issues, but you in specific, Mr. Assad, have to resign because you've killed too many civilians. And so Assad personally didn't like that idea. And that was really the sticking point. When Assad tried to become friends with the Arab Gulf states again, he pissed off the Iranians. When Assad wouldn't cut off the Iranians, he pissed off the Arabs. And when Assad wouldn't step down, he kind of pissed off the Turks. And so every which way Assad turned, he pissed off his supporters. And, you know, Russia can't all of a sudden put an army in Syria that quickly. It would take time. And anyway, Russia is involved in a huge war. And so from the Lebanese point of view, Syria represents our supply lines to resist occupation. So it's very crucial from the Lebanese point of view. These so-called terrorists or rebels, whatever people want to call them, historically they have a very bad track record of basically being terrorists. Now, it's very similar to the Taliban, where now that they have taken over the government, they're trying to put on a nice face, be on their best behavior. And in the Syrian situation, that's absolutely required, because right on the border between Syria and Iraq is a huge army of Shiite militiamen who, if they get word that minorities such as Shiites are being massacred, or religious shrines such as the Zainab shrine, which is an important Shiite shrine, is being desecrated, then they'll invade. And so the current reformed terrorists, kind of like the Taliban, who are now the government in Syria, they're promising everybody they're going to be on their best behavior, which is yet to be determined. And then as soon as all this happened, Israel bombed all the advanced weapons that the previous Syrian government has. So these new terrorists, they don't have a single pilot in their entire horde. So the previous Syrian government had pilots and all kinds of other stuff. Israel has now blown up like 30 jets and all kinds of other good equipment. And so Syria is already, Israel is already worried that these guys will turn on them, these guys that they supported to destroy Assad and overthrow the Syrian government to ostensibly cut off the supply lines to Hezbollah. They are now worried that they will turn on them. And so they've quickly, Israel has now invaded the Golan Heights and has gone pretty deep into South Syria right now. Now, the massive terrorist hordes that have invaded from Turkey, that have taken over Syria, are likely not going to accept Israeli land invasion and land incursion to that level. So it brings us back to the classic story of the golem, that the Jew creates this monster to fight his enemies, and then the golem turns on them. So they're aware of this, and they're already trying to nip it in the bud. They're already trying to manage that danger of these monsters that they've unleashed, and they're trying to keep them down from becoming a problem for Israel. So that's basically the most simple, like, basic breakdown I can give, you know.
Yeah, and of course we have headlines that you know, back up everything you're saying from New York Times. Israel claims credit for al-Assad's ouster, but sees risks in his absence. So that sort of, you know, summarizes everything you just said. From Information Liberation, quote, we love Israel. Syrian terrorists credit Israel strikes for shock advance, basically saying that, you know, they would have never been able to pull this off without Israel bombing Syria on their behalf. And we reported on it as it was happening. And, of course, America has done similar things throughout the existence of ISIS, where, you know, ISIS would be moving to take on some Syrian governmental position and America would bomb it right before ISIS got there, saying it was, you know, just a coincidence. We're not ISIS's air force, but, you know, the targets that we bomb happen to benefit ISIS exclusively. And then we have this from Reuters. Israel says it will destroy Syria's heavy strategic weaponry. Israel will step up airstrikes in Syria as stores of advanced weaponry, Israel officials said on Monday, to keep a limited troop presence on the ground, hoping to head off any threat that could emerge in the fallout of President Bashar al-Assad's overthrow. Israel has watched the upheaval in Syria with a mixture of hope and concern as it weighs the consequences of the most significant strategic shifts in the Middle East in years. So, yeah, you know, so Assad escaped to Russia. I doubt that he'll be planning any sort of, you know, recapture. It, you know, to me, I was thinking about this today. If I was Russia and China, I would be working overtime right now to try to get a, like, UN security resolution to call on Russia and China to lead an international, almost do what America did in Iraq, where we got all of our allies to support this invasion of Iraq, do that, but for Syria, and have Russia and China leading it and being able to say to the world, hey, these terrorists took over. We need to, you know, reestablish control. We need to have a legitimate government there. Yeah. You know,
so the problem with
sort
that,
of cut,
I mean,
and dry.
That sounds good. That sounds good. But the problem with that is that Assad has pissed off so many Syrians themselves. And so that's why this is all happening. The only reason why any of this is happening is because of Assad's failures to win over the hearts and minds of his own people and opposition within his own government, within his own regime, within his own borders. So his heavy-handed tactics of some sort of collective punishment. Okay, basically, anyone who knows about military stuff, they'll understand. He had to do counterinsurgency, and there's really two methods of counterinsurgency. One is like cut off the whole town and kill everybody. And two is to try to win the hearts and minds with a charm and limited operations and essentially trying to root out the insurgents from the populace, which is extremely difficult. And especially when you have a media machine that is propagandizing the public against you, which is the Saudi-funded mainstream media machine. And so it was nearly impossible. And the backdrop for all of this is the United States is holding the Syrian oil fields. So the Syrian guys can barely even pay their army. So they're not going to die for $200 a month. So there's the other issue, that he doesn't even have enough money to pay his soldiers properly. And so while this horde of terrorists invaded from the north through Turkey, simultaneously United States-backed terrorists came up from the south, from the Al-Tanf base. So the United States terrorist trained base came in from the south. So what exactly is the Syrian military supposed to do when they receive word that FPV drones trained by Ukrainian experts are in the hands of the terrorists and they're getting paid $200 a month and they don't have no equipment? They're just going to be sitting ducks. They're getting hit. And then on top of that, half the country or more is okay with Assad leaving because there's a media campaign that has bashed him to no end, because every time he ever did collective punishment, every time he ever did a heavy-handed repression, of course, it's filmed on everybody's phone. So these tactics of collective punishment, like, it's, you know, you just ask anybody about counterinsurgency. There's really two methods, you know, kill everybody or try to win the hearts and minds. And so you can't win the hearts and minds when there's all this propaganda footage that is real of civilians being killed. And then there's propaganda that is not real that is being shoved down their throats 24/7, 365 as well. So without control of the information, without winning the hearts and minds, without money, he really couldn't do anything. And so basically he, no one's going to come help Syria because he lost popularity. That's the issue. So because he lacks enough popularity, that's why no one's going to come in and save him. Everyone's going to try to make do with the current situation. The current guys who just took power have to be on their best behavior. If they start killing Christians, that's going to look really bad for them. If they start killing Shiites, that's going to look really bad for them. they are going to probably force Sharia law, which is probably going to force women to wear a hijab. So everyone who claims to be, you know, caring about women's rights, but supports these terrorists in Syria, obviously they're a total hypocrite. So women were way freer under Assad, there's no doubt. And so it's a question of minority rights. And I don't mean women. I mean Shiites and Christians. Women's rights have basically gone to zero, and no one cares, right? So that's the truth. All those people who claim they care, but they support these terrorists, total hypocrites. Total hypocrites. So these guys are way worse for women. You know, remember the Taliban now won't even let women become nurses. That's how ridiculous the Taliban has gotten. Even women's normal women, traditional jobs of a caretaker, a midwife, and a nurse, even that, they're saying women are not allowed to do that. So that's how ridiculous these guys can go if left unchecked. But again, the Syrian situation, they're under a microscope. They have to be on their best behavior. That's why people are tolerating this for now. But the real thing is that obviously Israel is going to make a land grab, and Israel wants to cut off the supply to Hezbollah. That's what this is really all about. So the real question is, can Hezbollah continue to protect Lebanon without resupply? All the weapons they have now, that's all they're going to get. And so they are completely besieged and isolated. The Palestinian cause is essentially completely extinct. So, you know, if Hezbollah is in question, imagine Palestine. Palestine is done.
Right.
So that means they're going to destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque and build the Third Temple and roll out the fake Messiah. That would usher in the age of the Antichrist and one world government. That's their plan. That's their agenda. Is that going to happen? No. No, that's not going to happen, because Turkey, in its greed and its ambition to recreate the Neo-Ottoman Empire, has this maritime border conflict with Greece. It's a legitimate conflict. Every country in the world has a certain distance from their land that they have exclusive economic zone, or basically they claim the rights of this maritime territory. I think it's 20 kilometers it's 20 kilometers distance from the land that should be theirs. Now, Greece has islands that completely surround Turkey, right up to Turkey, and that's Greek island. So if you give them this 20-kilometer zone, it would just completely take all the water from Turkey. And Turkey is harvesting oil and gas from northern Cyprus waters, which would also be taken from them. They're already drilling. And if Greece gets its legitimate legal rights, that would no longer be belonging to Turkey. This is unacceptable to Turkey. They would have no access to water. Things they're already investing in and harvesting would be taken from them. And essentially, right off their beach would be considered a foreign country territory. So there's no way that's going to work. But this is the law all over the world, that 20 kilometers from your land is your zone. So they've come to an impasse, so to speak. There is not going to be a negotiated settlement on this one. So it is inevitable that Turkey will aggress the territory of Greece, which is, for those who know, exactly what an Orthodox saint said was going to happen. And he said that this will be one of the triggers for World War III. Another trigger for World War III is going to be Israel airstrike on nuclear facilities of Iran. Iran is going in the news every day saying nuclear enrichment is going accelerating and upgrading and enhancing even exponentially, like to a whole new rate, to a whole new level. They are, you know, it's the classical, they're one day away from the nuclear bomb, and they're always one day away. They're constantly always one day away. Well, now it seems like they're really, really, really very close to a nuclear bomb. So when Israel strikes the Iranian nuclear facilities, that's going to be a trigger for World War III. And when Turkey aggresses Greece territory, that's going to be a trigger for World War III. And these are the words of an Orthodox Christian saint, Saint Paisios. He said them a long time ago,
like over 100 years ago. But it corresponds really perfectly with what, like, Putin has said, talking about the Greeks being Greek Orthodox, saying, you know, calling them our co-religionists and saying we have a duty to protect them. Obviously, Russia was the protector of Syria. Now that Turkey is invaded, there's like this big conflict between Turkey and Russia that, again, aligns with the prophecy, but also is just, you know, imminently observable as a geopolitical reality.
Yeah. So once Turkey closes the Bosphorus Strait for Russian boats or aggresses Greece, it would just make sense. Okay, so basically, Ukraine is about to fall. It's only a matter of time. And Russia is not interested in a peace settlement with Ukraine right now. So Trump is trying to get a peace settlement with Ukraine. Russia sees no need. Russia's winning the war. And the longer they go without a peace settlement, the better they'll be able to settle for their side. There's really no reason for Russia to sue for peace right now. You know, there really is no reason for Russia to stop.
Well, does the fall of Syria change that, though? Because, Russia was obviously having to commit resources to protecting Syria. Does the fall of Syria mean that they'll now be able to move those resources to Ukraine, or does it mean that they're in a worse position and are going to have to commit more to Syria? There's the warm water port, TARDIS, in Syria, which I really haven't heard too much about, but, you know, I guess is still in operation. Like, what is Russia's move now? How do they treat this strategic change?
They feel they were betrayed by Erdogan in Turkey, but Russia did not have many resources in Syria to begin with, and they really winded down their presence in Syria because for years and years and years they were trying to do a national reconciliation project to bring national unity with the people who, you know, everyone's calling terrorists. They were trying to incorporate them into the Syrian nation and move forward. That was the Russian attempt and the Iranian attempt. They did not want Assad to exterminate those people. They did not want Assad to exclude those people. They didn't want Syria to be partitioned. They wanted peace and reconciliation. Now, the requirement for peace and reconciliation from Turkey was Assad has got to resign. Then there could be a new Syria. And so Assad got what he wanted. I mean, Erdogan got what he wanted because he made Assad resign in the end. And now there can be a new chapter in Syria. So, no one is going to stop that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So will this be a Turkish puppet regime in Syria? I mean, again, when we talk about the Neo-Ottoman Empire, is that literally what's going on here? Is they're going to install somebody that's controlled by Turkey in this Neo-Ottoman form, satrapy?
They are probably working with Turkey because anyway, all their supply and training comes from Turkey. So the thing is that they are like a poorly equipped, poorly armed rabble. They don't even have jets. They don't even have helicopter pilots. They don't have much. So it's like a proxy soldier that doesn't have the capability to defend against Israel. And that's the main thing, is that they don't have the capability to protect Syria from Israel. So now Israel's already invading and took out the heavy weapons. So their capabilities are limited no matter what they try to do. You know, they may want to fight Israel, but can they? Not really. And they know that. They know that a war against Israel will be futile. So they're not Hezbollah, basically, is what I'm trying to say. They're not at Hezbollah's level of equipment, of training, of quality of soldiers, of experience. So they can't really do that much. So Turkey is going to kill the Kurds, try to attack the Kurds as well during this chaos. Now, the point is, though, is that Turkey is going to expand westward. Turkey has to deal with this Greece issue. There's no way around it. And these are both theoretically NATO countries. These are both theoretically European, you know, ish countries. Turkey is kind of in Europe and not in Europe. But this is going to be an internal divide within the EU, within NATO. And so that'll be Russia's opportunity to attack NATO directly, which is going to be Turkey, which is creating division within NATO itself.
Totally crazy. All aspects of the wider World War III with Ukraine and everything else included. Thank you so much, Lebanon John at Lebanon_John on X.
Most people that research supplements and that are into health know that Irish sea moss and its benefits are documented and incredible. Well, our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com, happened to be able to get one of the top suppliers with the highest rated Irish sea moss to give them the authorization to private label it. So now it's Alex Jones Ultimate Sea Moss, exclusively available at thealexjonesstore.com. It is the ultimate superfood. The iodine, the trace minerals, the elements, the vitamins that are in this are incredible. They give you instant energy, instant focus. But as you take it for a few weeks, you feel the stamina, the libido, the mental clarity. It is a superfood. It is concentrated. So get Alex Jones Ultimate Sea Moss exclusively discounted at thealexjonesstore.com. And listen to this. One bottle is 40% off. Three bottles is 55% off. And again, one bottle is 40%. Get yours today at thealexshowstore.com. And I thank you for keeping us on the air.
Folks, Nerve Renew is in stock at InfoWarsStore.com, and this supplement is amazing for a number of different reasons. First of all, we know that prescription opioids and pain relievers end up making us feel groggy, cloudy of mind, and frankly, addicted after time. But with Nerve Renew, we have key natural ingredients. It's a nerve support formula designed specifically for peripheral neuropathy and nerve pain relief. So if you need help relieving your aches and pains and inflammation and maybe even some nerve damage that you have from an injury or just working with your hands for years and years, Nerve Renew is the way to go. So by visiting InfoWarsStore.com and getting Nerve Renew under the InfoWars MD tab at the top of the website, not only are you investing in your own health, relieving your own pain in a natural, healthy, and safe way, but you're keeping InfoWars on the air. We know that InfoWars is under attack. Alex Jones is under attack. Freedom of speech is under attack. But you can fight to keep InfoWars on the air. So please go to InfoWarsStore.com right now and get Nerve Renew under the InfoWars MD tab at the top.
Ladies and gentlemen, when I say I'm excited about bringing you the ultimate gut cleanse exclusively available at thealexshowstore.com, I'm not joking around. We don't sit there and shoot in the dark. We go out and we find what are already the best-selling, highest-rated products in the country, and we say, hey, we'd like to private label it, but we'd like you to make it a little bit stronger for us, so it's proprietary. You got it right here. The ultimate gut cleanse. This is not just a gut cleanse. It's not just a detox. It doesn't just have natural ingredients that gently get rid of parasites. Oh, it's got that covered. It's then got a whole bunch of stuff in it like saw palmetto that's good for all your glands. And even the government admits great for men's prostates. And it goes on and on. I cannot read all the ingredients. They're concentrated. They're incredible. You want to get it right now at thealexjonesstore.com for between 30 and 50% off. 50% off if you do the combo and get it with the ultimate probiotic.
InfoWars is listener supported, and we appreciate your donations. But buy a product and support your health, too. Nitric oxide is an important chemical messenger in the body. It promotes blood flow, and it helps nerve cells communicate with one another. But over time, our bodies produce less of it. Full of amino acids to produce nitric oxide, Nitric Boost helps raise the amount of nitric oxide in your body. Nitric oxide is needed for strength, cardiovascular function, and healthy neurotransmission. It helps to improve blood flow, which helps improve overall immunity. Get some today, now 40% off. Support your health and support the InfoWar at InfoWarsStore.com.
InfoWars.com is tomorrow's news today.
Putting the power of conversation into the caller's hands. You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal. Halfway through the show today, I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines for your calls and take your calls throughout the second half of the show. And we are going to move on to talk about some domestic issues, but this is World War III we're discussing. Let me give you some updates before we get right back into it. It is the 9th of December, meaning that today at 1 p.m. in Houston, Texas, in a courtroom, a judge will be hearing arguments about the auction that took place several weeks ago, where the Onion claims they won the auction and now own InfoWars. InfoWars, as well as the opposing bidders to the Onion, filed a suit saying this whole thing was underhanded. They didn't give us a fair shot. This is in violation of the rules of bankruptcy. That will all be decided today, one way or another, or at least we'll have some better footing. It may be that the auction just goes through. It may be that the auction is reversed and it's given to our guys rather than theirs. It could be that the whole thing is scrapped and they have to do a new auction and we won't know for another month. Whatever happens, you can support us at thealexjonesstore.com, whether it's InfoWars continuing on, whether InfoWars gets bought and destroyed by the Onion and we take the escape pod of the Alex Jones Network, create something even bigger and better in the future. TheAlexJonesStore.com is where you go to support us in all of these endeavors. And, of course, sign up for the Alex Jones VIP Club to get incredible discounts, exclusives, a free gift with your order, and so much more. Although I guess that's over. That was a Cyber Week deal. There's always incredible deals. Cyber Week ones have ended, but you can see here hoodies, 15% off. The silver coin is 25% off. Massive discounts. There's also the Trump on a stump, which I hadn't seen anywhere else. It's like Elf on a Shelf, but it's Trump. Now, we sold out of the first 2,500 of these. If you ordered the first round, it will be arriving by Christmas. If you want to place order for the new round of Trump on a stump, it will be a little bit of a belated Christmas present, but you can get it now. And it's actually a hilarious little doll. I haven't seen it in person yet, but it feels high quality. Like, it's heavy. It's a heavy doll. And this will sit nicely on your mantle or cling to your Christmas tree. It's a little Trump in an elf outfit, and you can set him anywhere. That's very funny. Hopefully you didn't miss out on that. But if you want one, you can go to thealexjonesstore.com and grab one. It just might not arrive before Christmas, but still would make a great belated Christmas present. There's also the 2025 calendar, which of course doesn't have to arrive by Christmas, but should arrive by New Year's, and that's available. It's the limited edition Alex Jones 2025 calendar, and for every month, you have a photoshopped, reimagined movie poster of one sort or another. Blade Runner, Dune, and all, you know, the main characters have all been replaced by Alex Jones, Elon Musk, Joe Rogan, Donald Trump. And there's the Matrix one, Jones of the Future. That one looks really good. But just a great gift for the InfoWarrior in your life, something to hang up. I don't know if you run a garage, hang it up in the garage, hang it up in your place of work. Just a fun memento you can enjoy for the whole year. The Alex Jones 2025 calendar featuring Alex Jones as history's greatest heroes. Mad Alex and the Info Warrior. Brave Jones. they're extremely well done and very funny. And I imagine most people would see this and think at first it was just a movie poster calendar until you look closely. You go, wait a second, that's not Mel Gibson as William Wallace. That's Alex Jones as himself. Just awesome stuff. He actually looks so much like Bruce Willis. It's hard to even tell the difference there. So just a great gift for the InfoWarrior in your life, and you can order it now at thealexjonesstore.com. The 2025 Alex Jones calendar featuring so many great movie posters reformed to fit the info war. Okay, I think that's all the updates I have. If you're watching on Rumble, if you were watching on Rumble, some viewers reached out saying they were having some trouble. We've corrected it. We fixed it. The Rumble stream should be running smoothly now. So if it wasn't before and you jumped over to something else and want to go back to Rumble, you can, because it is now running smoothly, I have been assured. So thank you to our audience for reaching out. As you know, we're on the radio, we're on TV, we're on Rumble and X, and we got tons of streams going all the time. And if something messes up, just let us know and we'll try to fix it as soon as possible. That's what our incredible crew is for. And you support this crew and everything they do, which is just unbelievably complicated and sophisticated, by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Now, with that, I got a pretty long comment from Young Triflin at Cajun Statum on X that I want to read out for going out to your phone calls. He says, I'm watching your show this morning like every morning. I do think, as far as greater Israel goes, of course, there is more to the story than that, and it is a tangled web. But I want to ask you to think for a second on what other reasons Israel would want greater Israel. As of now, Israel does not manufacture anything. Nobody is buying products from Israel. Israel is not self-sustaining or self-efficient. But if Israel can take enough of the Middle East and control it, now you have Israel as the sole proprietor of all Middle East oil. Israel would become self-sufficient and even more of a loose cannon. They no longer need their allies in the West. If Israel were to dominate the Middle Eastern oil fields in totality, and they already have nuclear power since the 1960s, Israel would become a global superpower. It's not just about a Zionist land grab. It's about fulfilling whatever religious prophecies they feel they need to fulfill. This is about Israel becoming a dominant world power with fingers entrenched in every country around the world already. See, I think that's true. And my post about Greater Israel, I got to admit, I get a little bit frustrated. You know, people are brutal on Twitter. But I don't usually get upset, you know, insults, mockery, like whatever. Who cares what these people think? They don't even know me. It doesn't really affect me. What really makes me mad, what really gets me, is when people post things that I already know with a condescending comment. That there's something about it where I'm posting about like Israel and they'll post a picture of Greater Israel and be like, you need to learn geopolitics, son. And it's like, you think I don't know this? Do you think I knew this when I was 14? I'm so far beyond Greater Israel as a concept. You think you're revealing something to me? It gets a little annoying. People can post stuff like, fine, you know, add on to whatever I'm saying. But it's this condescension where it's like, not only do I know what you're saying, that's already been incorporated in whatever I'm saying. I'm beyond whatever you are think you're revealing. I wanted to explain this a little bit. Saying Greater Israel and the map, you can see it on, it's on, you know, IDF patches. It's a well-established thing. But Benjamin Netanyahu got in trouble because he was doing a presentation with a map showing Greater Israel that doesn't exist yet, but as if it did. And people are constantly posting this map where you've got, you know, a big chunk of the Saudi Arabian desert, about half of Iraq, most of Syria, all of Lebanon, as well as all of traditional or historic Egypt. In the Sinai Peninsula and so much more. And I posted this saying, Greater Israel is a dream of some Israelis, but it's only a piece of a much larger project to establish a world government and world religion with Israel as the geographic and political center of the world. And I probably should add spiritual center as well. And all of these things that we talk about every day all ties into this. I sort of illustrate that by talking about Greater Brussels, the tri-state city in the Netherlands, where a group of institutional investors are planning the construction of a tri-state city, a megalopolis with a population of around 45 million, extending from across the Netherlands, Germany, and Belgium. For this to happen, they obviously need to buy up a lot of farmland. And a lot of what you see going on with the farmers being shut down, it is all openly predicated on the fact that they want to buy up the farmland and build, you know, multifamily housing and flood the countries with people from the third world. It is a, you know, all of this is all part of the same plan. So, you know, the people in Israel, I think some of them want Greater Israel because they want Israel to be great. Just like people in America now, half jokingly, but are talking about like wanting to take over Canada. And they're just like, we can take it over. We'll be so much bigger, posting maps that show America as including Canada and as well as chunks of Mexico. Like they're, you know, I'm sure there are people in Israel that just, you know, want more land, want to embiggen their country. There's also some that just think out of safety, they need to have, you know, buffer zones around the, you know, what currently exists as the state of Israel. But zooming out even further and wider, you see the Greater Israel is really just part of a global scheme that it's like, again, we've talked about it so much. It almost feels like just retreading long, long covered ground to talk about the fact that like they want a one world government. In order to have a one world government, you have to split the rest of the world up into sectors. They'll dissolve national lines. They'll get rid of nationalism as a concept. Instead, just have world administration sectors of North America, South America, Europe, Asia. And those will be, you know, governed from a central location. So you've got to have like the tri-state area in Amsterdam and Brussels, and they'll make that one giant city, and that'll be the capital of the European sector. And they'll have, you know, one in America, you know, the Northeast corridor will be, it already is basically one major megalopolis, one major continuous city, but it will be, you know, all consolidated as a single city. And all of these different sectors of the world will be governed by one world government. Well, where are you going to put the one world government? The obvious location is Israel. It is the geographic and political center of the world just by nature of where it exists at the intersection of Asia, Europe, and Africa. It only makes sense. And all of this is in service of that ultimate goal. So, you know, again, like all of this it's different people, it's different factions, it's different groups vying against each other. Sometimes they're in cooperation, sometimes they're at odds, just like the rest of the Middle East that we're talking about, like on a global scale, even more complicated, even more tangled, the web being weaved. And, you know, so you have some that are religiously motivated and think that they have to gain control of a certain amount of land before, you know, the Messiah will come. And so they really are concerned about the land. Others are just like, well, we just need a buffer state of some sort. So it doesn't necessarily have to be Israeli land, but, you know, maybe it's Israeli, you know, it's like how Gaza is, where it's technically independent, but it's surrounded by and controlled by and administrated completely by Israel. It's not populated by Jews, but it is Israeli land. Like maybe they'll have, you know, an aspect of that in places like Syria, where Muslims that are, you know, willing to go along with the one world government are simply administrated out of Israel. Again, it's all very complicated and it's all malleable. Like the people doing this are human beings. Not everything fits exactly in their designs, exactly how they design them. Sometimes there are setbacks and they have to reformulate their ideas. In the case of, you know, what's happened with Israel, they might use the desire of greater Israel to, you know, gain the upper hand in some regard, but they don't actually care about the territorial expansion. They just care about getting rid of groups that oppose them. And it seems like every faction has a division between those that are going along with the globalism and those that aren't, right? In America, you've got the populace versus the establishment. Establishment going along with the global agenda, the populace trying to resist it. Then in religions, you have sectors of, you know, sects of the Christian population who are being told to go along with the program and others who are resisting. And we've talked about this in relation to Russia and the Russian Orthodox Church, very obviously and openly and really more so than anybody else leading the charge against the coming Antichrist and the Tower of Babel civilization that they're trying to create. Well, one outcome of the war in Ukraine is that the Russian Orthodox Church has been split from its historic progenitor in Ukraine. Now there's a Ukraine Orthodox Church that is in line with the globalist agenda, while the Russian Orthodox Church is not. In Islam, you have the Sunni Muslims, Saudi Arabia and Turkey. They seem to be, you know, on the forefront and you know, leading the advance towards globalism, whereas the Shia seem like they're resisting it and are more nationalistic in character and don't want to dissolve, you know, the lines between countries. And of course, amongst the Jews, you have the same thing where you've got ultra-Orthodox and, you know, even people in Israel that don't want, you know, greater Israel to be established, don't think that it's human behavior that will bring about the Messiah. I think that really they shouldn't be doing this. And by doing this, they may be delaying the, you know, coming of the Messiah. It's all very complicated. It's all very confusing. But people pointing out, you know, the existence of the scheme for greater Israel, that's not what it's all about. That's not completely what it's all about. Even when I pointed out that like Turkey and the Sunni Muslims aligned with Saudi Arabia, I mean, they have sleeper cells in Europe right now. And they're not, sleeper cell isn't even the right word because they're actively engaged in political takeover. They're not doing it violently yet, but they could be activated at any moment. We've talked about it before. You know, you've got Muslims in Europe who are saying, you know, they understand that they're engaged in an invasion. They are saying, hey, the Muslims have taken over this town. We have this percentage of people in this town and we're only gaining and we're going to take over all of Europe. They have no idea what's coming. Like they say this, they understand what they're engaged in. There's all these sleeper cells destroying Europe and basically erasing the national boundaries and even erasing the people and therefore erasing the concepts that originated in Western Europe of freedom and resistance to tyranny and individualism and all these things that are a barrier to the total control of the one world government. All of these things play into the desired establishment of a one world government with a one world religion and the resistance against it. It's not simple whatsoever. Turkey sees rising threat of greater Israel arriving at its borders. Well, apparently they just gave it the biggest victory that they've had in a while by collapsing Syria, who was a major point of resistance against the expansion of Israel. So, again, it's like, do these people Do they mean what they say? Are they lying or are they wrong? It's all sort of, I guess, in the eye of the beholder. But it is interesting. And just know that, you know, the desire for greater Israel is not the be-all, end-all of what's going on right now. It has to do with Ukraine. It has to do with Russia. It has to do with resistance to the New World Order. It has to do with dissolving national lines everywhere and establishing basically an international nation in Israel that will serve as the capital of the world government, in my interpretation of their statements. So with that, I do want to go out to phone calls. The number to dial if you'd like to call in is 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. I know most of the callers that are already waiting want to talk about Syria, but if you want to call in about domestic issues, we are going to talk a little bit about that as well, whether that's what's happening with Daniel Penny, the ongoing manhunt. I'll admit I was wrong. I did not expect the UHC assassin in New York City to get away for this long. I expected this whole investigation to be wrapped up in about 48 hours. Even if they just pinned it on somebody, this is pretty embarrassing for the New York Police Department. They're releasing more photos of the guy, but every release he looks totally different than the other releases. Very bizarre stuff. So we can talk about that. You can talk about what's happening with Jay-Z and Diddy and the accusations from back in 2000, and we'll talk about the interview that Trump gave, so show you some clips from that that are heartening. They represent the fact that Donald Trump seems to be sincere in his more outlandish campaign promises. Whatever you want to call about, give us a call, 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539, taking your calls live this Monday morning. Let's go to Godzilla in Wisconsin. Wants to talk about the Greater Israel Project and the expansion of the Middle East war. Godzilla, you're on the air, sir.
Hey, Harrison. Yeah, I think what we're seeing now is what I called in a couple weeks ago about the Greater Israel Project, how they're Israel's kind of like Godzilla now, rampaging in the Middle East with our assistance and Europe's assistance. And a lot of it now is going to be in Trump's hand as the peacemaker we elected him as. And this is a very unique turning point in war because it shows the technology of drones completely changing geopolitics and warfare, where, in Israel, the population is about 10 million people, and there's about 15 million Jewish people worldwide, that a country like that can just totally shake up geopolitics between Russia, China, the U.S., Europe, Africa, the Middle East, everywhere, and now with Trump, it's going to be part of a liberation process. We're having to become liberators to free the world of war and liberal occupation. And I don't know if you saw in the news, it's all kind of linked up with Red String. It's all related with the new drone technology, which is quintessentially UAP UFO. I'm talking specifically about the Lockheed Martin shape-shifting drone, shape-shifting jet. It's apparently a jet that can change colors, emit different colored lights, and change shape. And even, imagine this, recharge it electronic batteries for flying remotely. And there's videos of things like this all over. One locally is Weird Things in the Milwaukee Sky, where you can see these drones floating above a power plant. Seems like they're recharging, and it matters in our world now because I think we're going to see a lot more drone warfare, not only in the Middle East and with this Greater Israel Project, but also in Europe and the Russian-Ukrainian war. And eventually, if there's not peace, I think it's going to be domestically here in the U.S. drone swarms. What do you think?
I think that's absolutely where it's going. And we've been saying since the beginning of the Ukrainian conflict that in history, every world war, really every major conflict, but in particular the two world wars, were both preceded by a smaller regional war where the people that would eventually engage in World War I sort of test out new technology, whether that's like submarine technology in World War One or aerial bombing in World War Two that really came to fruition, the Spanish Civil War or the Russo-Japanese War. Like, it seemed like Ukraine was always sort of a predecessor to a wider global conflict where these technologies like drones were being deployed on the battlefield for the first time in really devastating ways. Of course, in this case, it seems like the Ukraine war is World War III. It's just, you know, being rolled out in sort of a different fashion. But certainly drone technology is making a massive difference on the battlefield and giving basically upending the power differentials between people. Because if you can just have a $100 drone, in many cases, that's more effective than a $10 million missile, which is just wild and means that, more impoverished countries can actually do more. And then you get, you know, to what China is doing. And if you were to see swarms of micro explosive drones going into cities and hunting down targets, I mean, it is a devastating and dystopian future that lies ahead if we don't, you know, decide we just want to stop killing each other eventually. Thank you for the call, Godzilla. Let's go to Bart in Georgia now on line three. You want to talk about the fall of Syria? You're on the air, Bart.
Yes, sir. The fall of Syria, I don't really know or think it's going to be World War III, but I do know it's the death blow to Europe. It's the straw that broke the camel's back, pun intended. But I see this as a continuation of the plan they had during the pandemic. Collapse the third world, flood Europe and the United States with refugees. I know we're going to get some of these people here. Hope not.
Well, you know, the flip side of that is that a lot of people are saying now, hey, all the people that fled Syria for Europe on the, you know, understanding that Assad was a dictator and they had to flee him or else his government would destroy it. Like, well, Assad's gone now. They can all go home. They can all go back. So maybe this is an argument for repatriation of the so-called refugees in Europe now. But at the end of the day, destabilization serves nobody legitimate, right? Nobody, no normal people want destabilization, want greater chaos, but that's exactly what we're getting. And it all folds into the plan to, as Bart points out, collapse Europe, flood Europe with the third world, and create the situation in which people are simply begging for relief from the chaos and are willing to put up with anything if it promises that relief. So expect digital IDs and, you know, ULEZ no-go zones and just all sorts of stuff coming down the pipe predicated on, well, the world's just way more dangerous and there's all these crazy people running around and, you know, we have to implement, you know, psychological programs to reprogram them into our liberal ideology. And slowly but surely, they're putting in the necessary prerequisites for the one world government that we've been warning you about for 30 years. It's all happening now.
Ladies and gentlemen, InfoWars is back on the air. The judge is having emergency hearings. Looks like their fraudulent sale won't go through. But regardless, I'm suing the daylights out of the Democratic Party and the big national gun control group that's actually behind The Onion and has now admitted it in court. So, we also have backup studios, the Alex Jones Network. Whatever they do, we're staying on air to make sure Trump gets into office and to back him and his agenda to stop World War III, secure the borders, and more. But we can't do it without your support. So there are all these new, amazing, incredible designs up on the AlexJonesStore.com. It has nothing to do with InfoWars. Not owned by me, so they can never get that. That's how we stay on the air, even if they're successful in shutting us down. If you go to the AlexJonesStore.com and you get great supplements, t-shirts, limited edition collectible fundraiser posters, and more, you will keep me on the air regardless of the Alex Jones Network. Please go to the site now, the AlexJonesStore.com, and keep us on air. They're amazing products. Thank you so much for taking action. You are the resistance.
Now, the one thing I want you to do, if I could ask you to do anything for America and Alex and this network and this crew, the one thing I would ask you to do, go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and sign up for Alex Jones VIP Club. It's $30 a month, but you get $40 in store credit. So if you're going to buy a $35 shirt, you might as well sign up for the VIP Club so that you can get that extra $10 and just get the shirt that you want. That is going to ensure that we can fund this operation, fund the next operation, ensure that Alex always has a voice. They can try to steal his identity. They can try to steal his business. They can try to steal America. They can try to sacrifice humanity in nuclear genocide. But if you go to thealexjonesstore.com and sign up for Alex Jones VIP Club, They'll never take away our voice. They'll never take away our freedom. They'll never take away free speech, and we can save America together. Please, go now and be the reason Alex Jones will always be on the air.
Infowars.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're going to take your calls throughout this hour. We've got a lot of other stories to get to as well. We just look at some of these changes. I don't think we've censored it, so I don't want to play it. But clip number two is Axios CEO says, my message is to Elon Musk is that you're not the media. X is not the media. They scream to a ever decreasing audience. No, we are. We are. It's happening. And you need to get over it. Again, I do think it's kind of unfortunate. I think we should have a robust mainstream media in this country. It is necessary to have mainstream media institutions with the gravitas needed to, you know, compel politicians, take on friendly interviews, things like that. But they've completely screwed up and failed to justify their continuing existence. So they're going away as a natural consequence of their dishonesty. So good riddance. Meanwhile, from New York Post, defund the police activist goes viral after begging for help when everything she owned was stolen in San Francisco, saying the cops didn't do crap. When thieves made off with Darcy Bell's rented U-Haul truck, the San Francisco woman put out a call for help on X, saying, if you see a 26-foot U-Haul truck with Arizona license plates, let me know because it had like everything I own on it. The post went viral, but not for the reason she hoped for. Bell spent years posting left-wing defund the police views, and users across the site blasted and mocked the activists. Anti-police activists begs police for help, jeered the ex-count Bay State of Mind, which comments on San Francisco Bay Area politics. Seems like a lot of people these days on the left are realizing what terrible ideas they had. Again, there is something weird with leftists. Like, until it affects them, they can't acknowledge it. Something in their brain, you can make the argument, you can sit there and go, we don't want to defund the police. What are you talking about? We need police. And they'll just ignore you and mock you and call you racist until it happens to them and suddenly they get it. I don't know why they can't imagine. It's like they have no imagination. It's like until it happens to them, it is not real to them. In fact, let's go ahead and go to this video, clip number 25. We won't be able to play the whole thing, but it's one of the Young Turks, Anna Kasparian, and Cenk Uygur has been on this tour as well, going to places like The Blaze or Patrick Bet-David, talk about unifying and, you know, coming together to oppose the establishment, which I'm for, except you need to go a bit farther, Young Turks. You're still terrible. Let's watch.
I can definitely be honest about my own flaws and my own mistakes because I bought the mainstream media narrative that there wasn't a migrant crisis.
Really?
And yeah, I did believe it. I believe because, look, I was an idiot because, I mean, who do you trust in today's media landscape?
I know.
Right? There's a lot of liars out there.
Yeah,
and when it comes to mainstream media, the fact of the matter is they do play defense more and more for the Democratic Party. And that's an issue because there was a time when that didn't happen. And so I still believed in their good faith reporting, even though it turns out, you know, a lot of these reports would omit really important details about what's really going on. And so it wasn't until Texas Governor Greg Abbott started busing or sending migrants to blue cities where that woke me up. That woke a lot of people up. And suddenly America realizes, oh, there is a migrant crisis.
Why did that wake you up?
Well, because all of a sudden you're seeing migrants sleeping on the floor in the police department in Chicago because they don't have shelter for these people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You're seeing, you know, these I love watching streams of city council meetings because that's how you understand what's really going on in these cities, right? Mm-hmm. These are real people who live there and they get their opportunity to speak.
Chicago's been an amazing thing to watch.
Wild.
Yeah.
I mean, I watch every city council meeting from Chicago because
they're crazy.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And for me, rather than relying on mainstream media reporting or anyone's reporting, to be quite honest with you, what I'll do is I'll go out of my way and I'll watch, you know, the entirety of a government function.
Yeah, that's nice. You could just listen to InfoWars the whole time. Like, this is the thing. They're just like, no, who do you trust? It's like, well, the people telling you the truth the whole time, obviously. Moron.
My fellow patriots, there are a lot of amazing Patriot gear, supplements, you name it, at thealexshowstore.com. But we've now added a whole bunch of other really cool items. There are a bunch of amazing campaign coins for InfoWars, for 1776, for the fight for liberty on the site as low as $9.99. Some of the challenge coins are $14.97. They're great fundraisers for us. They have a lot of weight in them. They look great. They're great conversation starters, great gifts, great keepsakes, mementos, and you know that you've supported the InfoWar. So I want to thank you all for your past support and encourage you now to go to thealexjonesstore.com, our amazing sponsor that will keep us on air one way or the other. If InfoWars get shut down, that's okay because they're a great sponsor. They're not owned by me, and the bad guys won't be able to shut down thealexjonesstore.com. So go there for the campaign coins and so much more today and keep me in the fight. Thank you so much for your support.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour is on this Monday morning broadcast. It's the 9th of December. Could very well be our last broadcast from the InfoWars studios, depending on how the hearing goes later today in Houston, Texas at 1 p.m. Arguments will be presented by both sides of the conflict about the InfoWars auction, the Onion's supposed purchase of us. It'll be interesting to observe. They're going to call witnesses. They're going to present evidence. People have been deposed and asked questions about this. Talk about it. Talk about a tangled web, folks. We're going to take your calls throughout this hour and also cover Trump's interview and a few other domestic issues. But for now, let's go out to your calls. Michael in Virginia has called in with a good point about how Afghanistan plays into what happened with Syria. Go ahead, Michael. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. And I'm grateful, Harrison, for your broadcast and for everything that the InfoWars has accomplished over the years. Thank you for allowing me to broadcast what I'm
Thank you.
To have this open conversation. Sir, the Afghanistan, interesting thought I had was whether or not the equipment used in Afghanistan was used in the overthrow of Syria. That was the plan from the very beginning. And I wonder about that. And also, I wonder about the United States' role in allowing its equipment to be used. What is the United States position in these wars in the Middle East for ego and pride, for two sides to wage war for all these years over territory? What is the United States role? Who is in the United States that allows, that's planning our position in the Middle East, and who controls that thought? And I love television, I love movies, and I love Kentucky Fried Chicken, but come on, you know, lives are being lost and wondering why. And that's it, sir. Thank you so much, Harrison.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, Michael. I would not be surprised in the slightest if a large – I mean, we left billions of dollars of equipment in Afghanistan, equipment that we deliberately did not destroy. Like it would have been smarter. It's still incredibly wasteful, but okay, fine. It's too expensive to bring back all of the guns and ammo and armor and tanks and helicopters. And then you're supposed to just blow them up, right? You're not supposed to hand them to your enemy. We handed them to our enemies. They could have been sold to HTS. They could have been handed over. I mean, they are an offshoot of Al-Qaeda, which was operating in Afghanistan. It's like the same people. It's like literally the same organizations. So I don't think it's out of the question at all that these things would be used. I also think you know, all of the money or equipment that's being shipped to Ukraine, a lot of it goes missing. You know, there's been no audit of it. Hundreds of billions of dollars in that case of equipment being sent over. It'd be a simple matter for some sort of Ukrainian oligarch to divert some shipment away from the Ukrainian-Russian lines towards, you know, sell it to Turkey. And of course, the HTS horde was using Ukrainian drones. We've seen examples in Ukraine of, you know, the Ukrainian forces being trained by people with ISIS patches on their shoulder. So again, all of these are various manifestations of the American, NATO, CIA, Mossad, you know, operations creating these so-called rebel groups, arming them, you know, handing over the supplies to the extremists that Saudi Arabia is funding. And it's just, it's a tangled web, and the weaponry that America has sprinkled throughout the Middle East and really all over the world is the necessary grist for this grind meal, this grindstone that is destroying humans for some design or another. It's absolutely brutal. Thank you for the call, Michael. Let's go to Troy in Florida. You want to talk about domestic issues here? Go ahead, Troy. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Smith.
Good morning.
Always looking sharp. Yes. What I was come to my mind for about the last 7 years was I haven't really heard this song since high school, and that was Genesis, No Fun Being an Illegal Alien.
Hmm.
I mean, for a while, I think it probably was, but hopefully it changes. And just maybe it's possible to hear that sometime on a little clip or whatever on the show. And, okay, so second, I have a second question is numerous times I've called in at 605 area code number to listen to Alex Jones' show. And I've been wondering, I haven't been able to find it. Is there a number for your show and also the War Room to listen on the phone?
That's a good question. I don't know if the crew can. Okay, yeah, the crew's going to get with you. Maybe, get with me too. Tell me that number and I'll give it out to everybody. Because, yeah, there's so many ways to listen in, and that's one of them. I know people like truckers like doing that because you can't always get the reliable signal, but. You know, the phone signal is usually the best option. So all of the crew give me that number and I'll give it out, but they'll get with you right now, Troy, to tell you how to connect. Let's go to Damien in Maine. Thank you for the call, Troy. Damien in Maine, you're on the air.
Oh my God. Thank you guys so much. I want to shout out, the products first, the X3, the real red pill. I take them. I love them. I'm up here in Northern Maine. I wanted to touch upon an issue, something that I hadn't heard anybody really consider. We have like laws structured around paramilitary groups, right? And that to organize a paramilitary group sort of under the nose of law enforcement would be sort of a difficult thing to do, you know, to train and to organize men. Anyways, back to what you were talking about with the drone thing and the technology, we actually have someone that's doing something similar to this, right? A robot factory, right? And who has one of those? Mr. Elon Musk. And I, you know, I'm hoping that if it's something that he's not doing, I think it's something we maybe should encourage him to do, is to, you know, to build a drone factory. You know, that way we can basically, you could raise an army this way, you know, and you don't have to train them. It's not like soldiers where you have to train them to shoot. You just download software to this machinery, basically, you know, and during the wars like World War II and stuff where we were mass producing these jeeps and things, it's something that it might be a necessary tool for us to have to tap into, because it's something very well China could be doing. I mean, obviously, with all this drone technology, you feel me?
Yeah, absolutely. And just this weekend, China rolled out, and for the first time I saw on video, this, like, ball drone that they have. Actually, it's right here. It was next on my – oh, shoot. It was next on my list here. I'll full screen that. The crew can go to it. China's released this this police robot that just looks like a giant wheel. That apparently can go about 45 kilometers per hour and can autonomously shoot. It's armed and now patrolling the streets of China. China is very much already doing this. And, of course, we've seen the way that drone warfare has affected the on-the-ground reality in places like Ukraine, where incredibly expensive and sophisticated tanks can be taken out by them. Of course, all that's kind of moot if you're talking about nuclear exchange, which I know Alex has talked about on his show, where it's Elon Musk going, people are still building F-16s when look at these drone swarms and how effective they could be. And it's like, yeah, but these little tiny drone swarms, they can't carry a 1,000 megaton missile to Moscow. You need big rockets and missiles and bomber plane delivery systems for that type of stuff. So I just, you know, it's like, I guess we have to, you know, you're right. We do have to be doing this because obviously China's doing it. It's just a fact of reality. We should be, you know, pursuing more autonomous weapon systems just to contend with the fact that our enemies will have them. At the same time, wouldn't it be nice if we just did something not related to war every once in a while? Wouldn't it be nice if we had industries self-sufficient, making robots to help us do the dishes? I don't know. It's all just depressing talking about this stuff because, I mean, you know, talk about the way drones have changed the face of war in Ukraine. Very obvious, very evident. I have videos here. I don't even really want to show you, but you've probably seen a ton of them. Just drones, you know, killing individual Russians or Ukrainians on the battlefield there. But look at Gaza. Look at the way that there are autonomous flying drones. They have loudspeakers. They're playing sounds of like kids or women in trouble to draw people out. They're using AI to establish targets to then, you know, do airstrikes on. It's a very disturbing and inhuman world that is being created because of these conflicts. It's almost a self-perpetuating sort of thing. Just absolutely brutal and frankly terrifying, but that's just where we're at this point. I mean, you have robot dogs patrolling Mar-a-Lago now and defending Trump's family. Cool. So that's the little bit of 1984. That's a little bit of Fahrenheit 451 that we've grabbed. Remember, the world we're living in is not a singular dystopian vision. It's a smorgasbord. It's a little taste of all of the worst things from dystopian novels in the past. And Fahrenheit 451, of course, talks about the robotic dog. And that's exactly what we're seeing rolled out now in a very real way and on the battlefield. Incredible. Thank you for that call, Damien. Let's go to Sean in Denver. You want to talk about biblical prophecy? Go ahead, Sean. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. Can you hear me okay, Harrison?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'd just like to talk about biblical prophecy because we're moments away from a lot of things happening. For instance, like the rebuild of the Third Temple. Everything that's going on in Israel, the mark of the beast, everything that's coming together, I just don't see how anybody can't be a full believer in the Bible right now. I mean, there's just no time for cherry picking in our Bibles. You either believe in everything in our Bible or you don't. And what's getting ready to happen, Harrison, it's really important to understand because our Bible lays out specific things that are getting ready to happen in chronological order. And when we're in Revelation, obviously, those things go in order. And it starts with the two witnesses. It'll start with the, you know, the Antichrist. And people like Lebanon, John, and everybody else, I don't understand why they don't think this is going to happen. I just don't know exactly what it's going to take for, you know, people to fully believe in their Bibles. Because people really need to be born again, Harrison, and we really need to be wargaming the rapture right now and talking about the gospel and talking about what actually saves us today in the church age and how we're born again, which is by grace through faith and believing and trusting what, you know, Christ did on the cross, and understanding, you know, there's different points of view when it comes to the rapture, but this rapture is going to take place this moment that Paul preached about in the twinkling of an eye, the last trump, when those who are dead in Christ shall rise first, and those who are alive and remain shall be caught up together in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. This is going to take place. So I tell Chase, I tell, you know, everybody over there at InfoWars, we need to be wargaming this rapture because guarantee our military is wargaming it. And when it comes, that's when the great deception is going to take place. And that's when the fallen ones are going to reveal themselves. And that's when all hell is going to break loose.
and they're going to blame that abduction on an alien, or they're going to blame the rapture on an alien abduction. So it's going to be very convincing. A lot of people are going to fall for this, you know, great lie that, you know, aliens took us to some other planet or whatever. But these fallen ones are here. And you got people that come on your show talking about Elohim worship, cult, and all this other stuff. It's like, but you don't correct them and say, well, you know, this is...
I don't really agree with you, and I'm letting you talk, Sean.
Okay, but, you know, the Elohim worship cult that this guy was talking about the other day, talking about the fallen ones, but not giving real light to who the fallen ones are. Let's just get real. Christians are about to be persecuted en masse in FEMA camps while these fallen angels run this great deception on everybody. And people that think that Christians like myself are just Elohim worship cult, well, you got to read the Bible and you got to take it a little bit more serious and understand that this great tribulation that's coming on earth is, it's very close. I mean, Revelation is right around the corner. And so we really need to start talking on this show with pastors who understand biblical prophecy and can actually start, you know, talking about, like, you know, the red heifer that Alex Jones doesn't want to talk about, the third temple, all this stuff that's getting ready to happen in Israel. Because, guys, I mean, we're running out of time. And if you're not wargaming, at least a pre-trib rapture, you're doing your listeners a huge disservice. And
I personally don't believe in the rapture. I don't really believe in the dispensationalism or any of that stuff. A lot of that is fairly new interpretations that don't have a great history, especially amongst the church fathers. So, you know, I appreciate, you know, your insight, but, you know, while you may think that other people don't believe the Bible enough or pay enough attention to it, other people would say that they know more and, you know, interpret it differently. So it's all different interpretations. And you're coming from a subjective standpoint, which is fine, and you may be right, but I've also seen, you know, the alternative pitched in a convincing way as well. So I would just say that, you know, these prophecies, the, you know, revelations, all this sort of stuff, first of all, it can be used by people that just want to control you. It's not really a difficult thing for them to manipulate geopolitical events in order to play into, you know, one belief or another. So you always have to be asking, okay, is this a naturally occurring thing that's God's will, or is this somebody, you know, dressing it up like that? I'd also say you should read history, especially the history of sort of Christian apocalyptic beliefs, because you are, I understand and I get that you are very convinced that now is the time where all this is happening, but I also suggest maybe a little bit of humility and understand that just because we are alive right now doesn't mean that this time is any more important than any other time. And there were people in the 500s and the 1600s and 1,000 times in between now and 2,000 years ago that were equally as convinced, equally as certain that it was the end times then. People under Nero, right? Just a couple, maybe one generation after Jesus thought this was it. This is definitely the end times. Nero's definitely the Antichrist. The world's about to end. Well, that was 2,000 years ago. So, you know, just because things seem like they're pointing towards Revelation now in some sort of narrow interpretation, well, exactly the same thing seemed to be happening around the time of like the year 1000, like that time period of like 1000 to 1100, massive political and religious turmoil around the world, people convinced that, you know, the things that they saw in their lives corresponded with prophecies. So just, you know, don't be too certain. Don't be too certain one way or another. And at the end of the day, I don't know how exactly we prepare for the rapture other than pray and try to get on the ship before it leaves, I guess. I mean, if the rapture happens, I don't think our preparations are going to affect it one way or another. That's God revealing himself in just massive monumental change. I would rather prepare people for the possibility that the rapture is faked. I think, you know, talking about UFOs and saying, you know, it's aliens doing this. Again, it's whatever your subjective interpretation of it is. I would just say that the people I've heard talk about revelation and what is supposed to be done for Jesus to come back and all that, I think does not correspond with my interpretation of what the Bible says. And it seems to me like they are being made to act extremely unchristian in their sort of lack of empathy or sympathy for the people that are suffering under the real world consequences of, trying to bring about some of these eventualities. You know, people that are like excited that Syria is going to get nuked because they think that that's what Revelation says, or like, you know, think this is a good thing. You know, there's like terrorists involved because now we may be closer to the return of Jesus. But I think it's just going to be the Antichrist next. So just maybe, you know, a little bit of humility, a little bit of less certitude, considering that nothing in the world right now points with 100% certainty that now is the time of the revelations. Certainly a lot of things pointing to that, but there are a lot of things pointing to that time and time again in history. So, I don't take a lot of it too seriously, especially when you understand that you're talking about biblical prophecy and the God of the universe. And it's like, what am I going to do to affect that? What am I going to do to change that outcome one way or another? God doesn't need my help and I can't hinder him. So be prepared in your personal life in whichever way you interpret what's going on today. But understand that, you know, people in the 1600s felt just as strongly that they were in the end times. And that was a long, long time ago. So keep that in mind, that it could be year 2400 and people are going, we are at the end times. And people like me will be sitting there going, well, you know, in 2024, they thought that was true, too. It might not be. We don't know. And also, I don't think anything is set in stone. And I think human behavior can forestall, you know, the eventuality. If we don't need Jesus to come back and save us all from descending into hellfire, I think we can actually just, you know, do what's right and behave in a Christian way and waylay that eventuality as much as possible. Human will does have an impact, but not if you're trying to bring it about, I don't think. Anyway, let's go to – thanks for that call, Sean. Let's go to Justin in Florida. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison.
Howdy.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about – I called with you like a year and a half ago and said that they'd end up suspending the Constitution, the
– Uh-oh. All right. He dropped somehow. Sorry about that. Let's go quickly to the gorilla in Baton Rouge. We've had Godzilla. Now we have the gorilla. Go ahead. You're on the air, gorilla.
What's up, Harrison, my man? You doing all right?
Doing good. How are you?
Good. I think you need to go into politics the way you danced around the Revelations statement.
Dance around. I didn't dance around anything. I told him I didn't agree with that.
Well, you know.
He's allowed to believe whatever he wants. I don't care.
I'm not criticizing you. I agreed with you. So,
well, thank you.
I called to talk about Bashar al-Assad, but I got to get to this this robot factories. Does anybody watch War of the Worlds with Gabriel Byrne? These robot dogs walking around targeting human beings, can't duck, can't get around from anywhere, and they have a symbiotic nervous system that's linked to all of them. Sorry, mm-hmm. Not in favor of that. Anyway, back to the original thing that I called about was Bashar al-Assad. It was like 20 years ago, a National Geographic article came out right after he took power. And he was talking about free and fair elections, wanting to turn the whole Middle East into a unified democracy and having no wars in the area and being self-sufficient off of everybody in the area.
Yeah.
Right after that, our media, our politicians, everybody started attacking him. I think that we need to go back to the National Geographic article, really study it, and study what was going on with him and the way he was raised in London, becoming an eye doctor or dentist. I don't know which one. But
yeah,
anyway.
He was an eye doctor. I think he went to, like, Oxford or something. I mean, you know, highfalutin, high education. His dad was president at the time. And, you know, that's what Lebanon John was referring to as the pan-Arabism. That was Assad and Hussein and the Ba'athist Party's dream.
My fellow patriots, there are a lot of amazing Patriot gear, supplements, you name it, at thealexjonesstore.com. But we've now added a whole bunch of other really cool items. There are a bunch of amazing campaign coins for InfoWars, for 1776, for the Fight for Liberty on the site as low as $9.99. Some of the challenge coins are $14.97. They're great fundraisers for us. They have a lot of weight in them. They look great. They're great conversation starters, great gifts, great keepsakes, mementos, and you know that you've supported the InfoWar. So I want to thank you all for your past support and encourage you now to go to thealexjonesstore.com, our amazing sponsor that will keep us on air one way or the other. If InfoWars get shut down, that's okay, because they're a great sponsor. They're not owned by me, and the bad guys won't be able to shut down thealexjonesstore.com. So go there for the campaign coins and so much more today, and keep me in the fight. Thank you so much for your support.
I'm a humble person, and I want to say that I'm just a man. But I'm not just a man. Just like you, no matter what color you are, whether you're a man or a woman, you were made by the creator of the universe, who had a plan for you, who has a destiny for you. And that's why the system hates you and fears you, and that's why they hate me. It's because the spirit I carry is one of justice and truth and courage and honor and will and love. My friends, the enemy's coming after me, not because I'm a loser, but because I'm a winner. They're coming after you, not because you're a bad person, because you're a good person, because you love God and God loves you. And so I signed up for this. I signed up for this fight. And I'm not a victim. I'm an overcomer. But I can't fight this fight without you. That's why I want you to always remember that I appreciate you and I thank you, because InfoWars is your fight. InfoWars is your baby. It's a thing you built. We did this together. So God bless you all. Let's keep fighting.
As you can see, I'm not just MAGA, I'm Dark MAGA.
A few weeks ago, when I saw Elon Musk in Pennsylvania with Trump at Butler, and he had that dark MAGA hat on, I said, we've got to have our own. And we've come out with it. Yeah, we can put one out that, you know, just says Make America Great Again, and that's available at thealexjonesstore.com. But I personally like this one, Murdered Out. It fits great, and it funds the InfoWar and supports President Trump. And if you don't like Murdered Out, we got it white on black. So get yours right now and a bunch of other great designs of hoodies and T-shirts and top-of-the-line supplements that all fund the Second American Revolution at thealexjonesstore.com. Let me show you a few more of these. Now that the FDA admits fluoride does lower your IQ and give you cancer and infertility, it's a great time to wear one of these beautiful hats, and it's a great way to start a conversation and warn people. Here's the classic Make America Great Again Murdered Out, and we've got the Save the Frogs, over 50 designs, all at thealexjonesstore.com, and it keeps us on air and it spreads the word. Please go to alexjonesstore.com and get your Patriot gear.
At InfoWars MD, you can find the most popular in-demand supplements available and sourced at the highest quality. Nitric Oxide, Probiotics, Joint Relief Max, Nerve Renew, Prostate Support, Collagen, Superfood Greens, Turmeric, Ashwagandha, CBD, along with Mushroom Max Nootropic, Better Mood Plus, Libido RX, and Good Night Sleep. Improve the quality of your life and support the InfoWar. Go to InfoWars MD under Health and Wellness at InfoWarsStore.com.
InfoWars.com is tomorrow's news today.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Gentlemen, some important news. We have some very good news being reported from multiple sources right now. Daniel Penny jury verdict is in, not guilty. Not guilty. Daniel Penny is free. Claps erupt in courtroom immediately as Daniel Penny is found not guilty. Amazing, unexpected, but correct and just. Now he should countersue for being put on trial at all in the first place. 38 minutes ago, Daniel Penny trial update. The defense requested a mistrial, citing that chance of if we don't get no justice, they don't get no peace. We're audible in the courtroom. You literally have riotous protesters outside threatening the jury to convict. So the defense is saying this needs to be thrown out. We can't have this. There's no way we'll get a fair decision. The prosecution scoffed, saying that that only the less threatening chance of justice for Jordan Neely was heard. Okay. So the bang mob outside was just saying justice for Jordan Neely, not no justice, no peace. I'm sure they were saying the both. I'm sure both of these things were being said. Daniel Penny acquitted in lightning rod death of Jordan Neely. A Manhattan jury has cleared Daniel Penny of criminal wrongdoing in the chokehold death of Jordan Neely on a crowded subway, a caught-on-video killing that sparked fierce debate over the city's mental health system and crime underground. The panelists acquitted Penny of criminally negligent homicide, which would have put him behind bars for up to 4 years, in Neely's chokehold death aboard a crowded uptown F train in May 2023. Manslaughter, the top charge against Penny, was tossed on Friday after jurors twice said they could not reach a unanimous verdict. And so they tried to, switch it up the last minute. Do a little three-card Monty. All right, well, if you won't convict for that, convict him for this. And they said no and have now acquitted him. The acquittal comes after jurors heard from more than 40 witnesses, including passengers, who described Neely's terrifying outburst on the train before Penny approached him from behind and took him down on the Broadway Lafayette station. And we have, of course, covered this extensively. Talked about the facts of the case, which, beyond any reasonable doubt, to use the phrase, meant that it never should have been brought in the first place. We've shown you the lead prosecutor in her, seeming obsession with getting Daniel Penny, despite doing things like going really easy on an actual murderer who killed an 86-year-old at an ATM for money, because she felt like she understood his trauma and what made him, would put him in the position to be forced to rob and kill an old man. She felt so sorry for him because he was black, you see. But Daniel Penny's white, which means she had some sort of ethnic grievance against him. So amazing. That's amazing. That's wonderful. We love to see it. Daniel Penny, Kyle Rittenhouse. We're building a team, folks. We're building a powerful team. It's incredible. I'm going to go out to your phone calls. We'll go ahead and go out to a few phone calls. I do want to go to some videos of Donald Trump because the interview that he did over the weekend is really top-notch stuff. But I don't want to leave you on hold for too long. Let's go first to Aaron in South Carolina because you want to respond to the End Times caller that we had previously. Go ahead, Aaron. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, man. So I've got a compliment for you. You want to hear that first?
Yeah, always, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Before I tell you and I point out how you dodged that question, I will say you are doing the main thing. The most important thing is righteousness, that we are crying out to the Lord to help us in this situation. That's how the kingdom comes. And that, I believe, you're doing. You're a good example of that, Harrison.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know. I didn't think I dodged around that question. Because look, I don't know. Maybe they're right. Maybe it's the end times. Maybe Jesus comes because Damascus will be annihilated with a nuclear bomb. Maybe all that's the case. Or maybe, that narrow interpretation is being utilized for people with, ulterior motives. And that's what I tend to believe. But I could be wrong. Who knows? Who knows? We're talking about, ancient prophecy and future projection here. Nobody knows, I think, is my point. So I just caution you to be too certain in these things. But thank you for that backhanded compliment, Aaron. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'm positive you guys are not, you're not looking into certain things. And this I know, unless something's happened in the last 90 days that I know your friends are involved in looking into, you are not looking into certain things. And that guy was specific about a red heifer.
Okay.
Into Israel.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about that.
You guys going to start addressing these things. Me as a supporter, listener of yours, and hopefully a friend, we're frustrated. There's things you guys are not talking about.
But that was
a specific thing right there.
This was so confusing. I've talked extensively about the red heifers. We covered it like ad nauseum back when they were like getting the whole thing ready. We've got this B-roll that we play, you know, at least once a week here talking about this stuff. Even when Lebanon John was on, he was talking about the Al-Aqsa Mosque and how that'll be torn down and, you know, they'll do the red heifer sacrifice and rebuild the third temple. I mean, we talk about all this stuff. We've talked about it today. This is what I don't understand. So what are we not talking about?
Okay. Well, hey man, I didn't see that. So if you've addressed that guy's question, then I apologize right now. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'm not asking for your apology. I just am confused. People say, you know, you're saying we haven't looked into this and we don't talk about it, but like talked about it probably more than anybody else you can point to on any other platform. So that's just what confuses me. And look, I'm on the side of Jesus was the Messiah. And so whatever's happening with the red heifers and the bringing of what, you know, those people think is the Messiah, like it's not the Messiah, it's something else because the Messiah came. His name was Jesus, sort of, I think, beyond argument at this point, but obviously people still are. So, yeah, we've talked extensively about the red heifer sacrifice. Again, I think it's just not something that corresponds with the revelations that have occurred with Jesus and the New Testament. So I just, you know, it's like, I don't really know how to put it, but it's like these people have these red heifers, these unblemished red heifers. They're like trying to genetically engineer them. And it's like, to me, these prophecies are just not correct. So it's like they can do that. It's not going to affect anything because it's not true. It's going to affect human behavior. So it has an effect, but it's not, they have a miss. I interpret the prophecy differently. So I don't know. I don't know, man. It's just not something I'm super concerned about because I just don't think it's true. Do you get that, Aaron? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but can I ask you a question, please?
Yeah.
All the evil deeds, the New World Order, is all this stuff being revealed right now?
To some degree, yes.
Okay. That is the revelation. Mm. Everything is getting revealed. Everything. Even our sins, you and me. Everything. That's what's happening right now. This is part of the revelation. It's game on.
It could be. It very well could be. I just, again, would point back to like the people that have thought that over and over in history. I'm not so sure that we are particularly special, except that some of the technology that's around now seems to make things from Revelation possible where they weren't before.
Okay. Well, hey, we're still on the battlefield together. Love you. I hope you guys, and again, that frustration's still there. We didn't deal with that on this phone call. I know there's stuff you guys are not looking into, unless it's happened in the last 90 days, and I don't know. But, hey, I'm with you. God bless you. Love you.
Well, thank you. I love you, Erna. And look, this is what this show's about, right? I'll tell you what I believe, and I'll tell you what I think is happening, but we open up the calls, and you're welcome to make your argument. And I don't know, I just haven't been convinced yet, but I'll definitely keep hearing the arguments for sure. Thank you for that, Aaron. Let's go to Amanda in Arizona now. You want to talk about something, the third front in the world war, which has not gotten a lot of attention recently. There's Ukraine and Russia. There's what's happening in the Middle East. And then there's China and Taiwan. Amanda, you're on the air. What's going on with China and Taiwan?
Yes. First, I want to just say I resonate with your frustration because when I hear people call in, I'm like, he did talk about that. I've heard him talk about it on multiple shows. It happens to all of you guys, so you can't cover everything. So I appreciate the depth and breadth that you go into certain things. But
thank you.
In terms of Taiwan, I know I was recently told by somebody who works for a large defense contractor, they were taken into a meeting and told that all of their projects and teams are going to be redirected because they anticipate China invading Taiwan as early as April. And I feel like China and Taiwan is something that was talked about a lot, maybe last year or so, but now has absolute zero like silence on it. Like you hear everything, something every once in a while about, oh, China's maybe getting closer or maybe they flew something over Taiwan. But it's curious to me that not more attention is being drawn to this, because that is, like you said, this is the like third part of what enters everybody into World War III. And Taiwan is such an important producer for us, right, with all the microchips and whatever, whatnot that we have with them. And I don't understand why this hasn't been discussed further.
Yeah, we've tried to talk about it whenever it crops up, and even, you know, in some stories that you don't see covered elsewhere. Like, we've been keeping our audience up to date on the fact that, you know, China and Russia are running, like, bombing drills together off Alaskan islands and things like that. Like, clearly the war in Ukraine has had these downstream effects of unifying Russia and China, emboldening China, and weakening Europe on the world, Europe and America on the world stage and in industrial capacity. Trump's going to have just a gigantic mess to deal with as soon as he's in office. So that's interesting. China invasion of Taiwan as soon as April of 2025. Well, wouldn't that be a wheel in the spokes of Trump's Make America Great Again agenda? Now we can just hope he can handle, you know, the people that run the world being willing to start World War III in order to prevent Trump from undoing what they've spent decades putting in place, this one world government pipeline that they're sending us down. Very, very interesting stuff. Thank you for that call, Amanda. I think on that note, we're going to go to some videos now of Trump's interview over the weekend, where he reaffirms a lot of the things that I know myself and others voted for him on the basis of. Let's start with clip number 12. Kristen Welker was questioning Trump, and she tries pinning America's division on Trump. And he responded in a powerful way. Let's go now to clip number 12.
Sir, I don't have to tell you this because you've talked about it. It comes at a time when the country is deeply divided. And now you're going to be leading this country for the next 4 years. For the sake of unifying this country, will you concede the 2020 election and turn the page on that chapter?
No. No. Why would I do that? But let me just tell you, when you say the country is deeply divided, I'm not the president. Joe Biden's the president.
But you're going to be the president.
No. I'm not the president. So when you say it's deeply divided, I agree. But Biden's the president. I'm not. And he has been a divider. And you know where he divided it more than anything else, and it probably backfired on him, I think definitely, is weaponization. When he weaponized the Justice Department and he went after his political opponent, me. He went after his political opponent violently because he knew he couldn't beat him. And I think it really was a bad thing. And it really divided our country.
Sir, Democrats have control of the White House now. They didn't in 2020. If they're going around stealing elections, why
didn't they
do it
this time? When you say Democrats have control now?
Of the White House.
Yeah.
So why didn't they steal this election? Since they have more power now.
Because I think it was too big to rig.
So you won't...
It's too big to rig.
To the people who say that you're now directing your Justice Department to investigate 2020, and they want to move on.
Very capable.
That
I think Pam is going to be great.
Precious resources.
By the way,
is that what you want them to do?
Just so you know, I have the right to do that, but I'm not interested in that.
You're not going to do that.
I'm not interested.
Okay.
I have the absolute right. I'm the chief law enforcement officer. You do know that. I'm the president. But I'm not interested in that. You know what I'm interested in? Drilling and getting prices down and stopping people from pouring into our border that come from prisons and mental institutions.
I just love seeing the way the old mainstream media tactics just fail on Donald Trump. These sophisticated, like, pressure method, I was going to say pressure campaigns, not even campaigns, just the individual questions themselves framed in a way to dishonestly manipulate the person being asked, basically being put in an impossible position where they go, either denounce your stated policy or admit that you are the problem and causing, and you're wasting government time and money on vengeance. And Trump's just like, I just want to open up the oil. We're just going to make a ton of money. he just doesn't let them guide the conversation. And it's a beautiful thing to see. And of course, this is like the one overarching lie of the presidential of Trump's entire political existence, is blaming him on the division that the left caused by going insane because of Trump. Trump isn't the one that caused everybody to go insane. Trump isn't the one that spread all the lies. Trump isn't the one that called half of the country deplorable or Russian agents. He's not the one that did all of this. All of that was done to blame Trump. And this is where this like weird Stockholm syndrome type influence the media has on the people of America, where the media is sitting there going, if you vote for Trump, it's going to be four more years of division. If you vote for Trump, it's going to be four more years of us making you anxious and causing chaos and division and destroying everything good. And people literally voted for Kamala Harris. They wanted to avoid Trump because of the misery that the media put them through. And then the media then blamed on Trump. It was never Trump's fault. It really goes to the heart of like everything that's gone wrong with the media and politics since Trump got into office. Or even threw his hat in the ring. Let's go to clip 17. This is a quick clip, but President Trump says he'll be acting quickly to release January Sixers. Let's watch.
I'm going to look at everything. We're going to look at individual cases, yeah.
Okay.
But I'm going to be acting very quickly.
Within your first 100 days, first day?
Yeah, I'm looking first
day. Issue these pardons.
These people have been there, how long is it? 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
You know, by the way, they've been in there for years, and they're in a filthy, disgusting place that shouldn't even be allowed to be open.
So again, great to hear Trump double down on that. I'd still want to see more. So there he says he's looking at all the cases, which is good. I'd prefer him to say, I'm just going to pardon everybody right off the bat, day one. Now he said he was going to do it day one. But he's still somewhat temporizing his statement, and we've seen other statements from officials saying, well, everybody who's innocent is definitely getting a pardon. And it's like, I don't understand what the hesitation would be. He's going to get bad press? Who cares? Is it going to affect his reelection chances? He's not getting reelected. He's never going to run for president again. There's no reason to not pardon every single January 6th, and we've said it over and over, but just to reiterate, everything that happened on January 6th was entrapment. It was organized, orchestrated, and started by the authorities in Washington, D.C. The National Guard were not brought in on purpose. The Capitol Police were the first ones to start the violence with a peaceful crowd. They opened up the doors and let people in. So even if violence occurred, and even if some of the protesters committed violence, all of it is under the umbrella of they started it, they started the violence, the people on January 6th were simply fighting back, it was all orchestrated and coordinated. And it would be, you know, all that needs to be said is to the, if people are mad, if they go, but you're even pardoning violent people, that guy punched a cop, you're pardoning him? And you just go, well, if you didn't want me to pardon him, then you shouldn't have convicted all of these other peaceful people, because we're not going to spend the time to parse through who is legitimate, who is not. The whole thing's illegitimate. The whole thing gets thrown out. If you want the violent people to be punished, then that's the only people you should have gone after. If you'd gone after a very strict and limited prosecution of just the big troublemakers and wanted to make an example out of them, then, you know, fine. We wouldn't have as much of an issue, at least. You would actually have an argument in that case. But you went after everybody, and the likes of Jacob Chansley or Stuart Rhodes or Enrique Tarrio, who weren't even – Enrique Tarrio was in prison in a different city on January 6th, but he gets convicted for January 6th. Do you have any idea how stupid this is? So if you hadn't done all that, then we could have done it on a piece-by-piece meal. It's got to be a blanket pardon. It's got to be for everybody. And they've got to launch lawsuits for maltreatment and you know, being deprived of their Fifth and Second Amendment rights under the Constitution. They need to get some sort of recompense and payout for the suffering that they've been under. So I'd give that an 8 out of 10 for Trump. 8 out of 10 answer on January 6th. He says he's doing it the first day. He shows genuine concern for the people that are suffering. Even now, right, saying, look, why would we wait any longer? These people have already suffered long enough. And saying that he's looking at all cases, not just – he didn't qualify that and say just the nonviolent ones. He said all. But he said, we're looking at all. I want to hear him say we will be pardoning, blanket pardon, everybody convicted for January 6th. We're going to pardon them. We're going to let them out. And then we're going to either, you know, pay settlements for how they were treated and scrub their records. They don't have this, you know, a charge for terrorism following them around the rest of their lives because they high-fived the cop and they're having a, you know, unapproved tour of the Capitol. It's all ridiculous. Finally, let's go to clip number 23. Won't be able to go to the whole thing here, but it's Trump about vaccines during this interview. Let's watch.
Let me ask you about RFK Jr. He has obviously talked about his skepticism of vaccines. He's expressed opposition to childhood vaccines. Do you want to see childhood vaccines eliminated?
If they're dangerous for the children. Look.
So possibly?
When you look at some of the problems, when you look at what's going on with disease and sickness in our country, something's wrong.
Are you talking about autism?
Well, if you take a look at autism, you go back 25 years, autism was almost non-existent. It was, you know, 1 out of 100,000. And now it's close to 1 out of 100.
Well,
I mean, what's happening if they can find it? Now, I did something the other night that was a little unusual. At Mar-a-Lago, I called the drug companies, the top drug companies, and I called RFK Jr. and Dr. Oz and some of his people. And I said, let's all get together and let's figure out where we're going, because we're going to do a lot of things. Number one, we're going to reduce prices, because the middleman makes more money than the drug companies, in all fairness to the drug companies. There's a middleman that nobody even knows who they are. And you look at our drug prices, they're much higher than the prices for the same medicine, for the same stuff. So we met. And we were met for a long time, and we talked about pricing, and we talked about vaccines, you know, in terms of what happens. We talked about pesticides. We talked about everything. And I think a lot of good things are going to come from him. And he's not going to upset any system. He's not going to upset the system. He's not looking to, you know, to reinvent the wheel totally. But when you look at the numbers, we really don't have a very healthy country.
Well, sir, going back 25 years, studies show that there is no link between vaccines and autism. And yet it sounds like you are open to the possibility of him looking
I'm
at
open to
getting
anything.
Rid of them.
I think somebody has to find out. If you go back 25 years ago, you had very little autism. Now you have it. I mean,
well, they say because they're better at identifying it.
Yeah.
1 in 100,000, and now it's 1 in 100. That's a pretty bad number.
Childhood vaccines.
I mean, something is going on. I don't know if it's vaccines. Maybe it's chlorine in the water, right? You know, people are looking at a lot of different things.
Well, you know, childhood vaccines.
I want them to look at everything.
Everything. So childhood vaccines have prevented about 4 million deaths.
My God, she literally has a binder full of talking points that she's referring back to. We can take it down. Again, just who can argue with that statement from Trump? Like, they're desperate, and you can hear, like, she clearly has instructions on exactly what she's trying to get. She was trying to get Trump to say that even just possibly they're going to look at removing childhood vaccines, because then you can run with the headline, Donald Trump says he's eliminating all vaccines for children. He hates vaccines. He doesn't give them that, but she tries multiple times. So you're saying possibly. You're saying possibly it's a chance. She has her pre-prepared talking points about studies have never shown a vaccine linked to autism. Well, they actually have. The studies either haven't been done, been scuttled, or been deliberately misinterpreted. But clearly, there is a link. Or there's something. And Donald Trump's just sitting there going, we went from 1 in 100,000 to 1 in 100. That's a major change. We should figure out what that is. And she's just like, well, no, don't though. But you shouldn't actually. It's like, no, we're going to make America healthy again. That's it for American Journal. Stay tuned. The Alex Jones Show in 90 seconds. Big update with the fate of InfoWars. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Most people that research supplements and that are into health know that Irish sea moss and its benefits are documented and incredible. Well, our sponsor, TheAlexJonesStore.com, happened to be able to get one of the top suppliers with the highest rated Irish sea moss to give them the authorization to private label it. So now it's Alex Jones Ultimate Sea Moss, exclusively available at TheAlexJonesStore.com. It is the ultimate superfood. The iodine, the trace minerals, the elements, the vitamins that are in this are incredible. They give you instant energy, instant focus. But as you take it for a few weeks, you feel the stamina, the libido, the mental clarity. It is a superfood. It is concentrated. So get Alex Jones Ultimate Sea Moss exclusively discounted at thealexjonesstore.com. And listen to this. One bottle is 40% off. Three bottles is 55% off. And again, one bottle is 40%. Get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you for keeping us on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, when I say I'm excited about bringing you
The Ultimate Gut Cleanse, exclusively available at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm not joking around. We don't sit there and shoot in the dark. We go out and we find what are already the best-selling, highest-rated products in the country, and we say, hey, we'd like to private label it, but we'd like you to make it a little bit stronger for us, so it's proprietary. You got it right here. The Ultimate Gut Cleanse. This is not just a gut cleanse. It's not just a detox. It doesn't just have natural ingredients that gently get rid of parasites. Oh, it's got that covered. It's then got a whole bunch of stuff in it, like saw palmetto, that's good for all your glands. And even the government admits great for men's prostates. And it goes on and on. I cannot read all the ingredients. They're concentrated. They're incredible. You want to get it right now at thealexjonesstore.com for between 30 and 50% off. 50% off if you do the combo and get it with the Ultimate Probiotic.
You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.